Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. More about the sequester. Tick-tock, tick-tock. The time bomb is winding down, and oh, what an explosion it will be. Oh, boy. Like an arsonist getting his jollies when the fire goes up. I look at the corporatists running our government in the same vein. They've made the bomb. They've created this crisis. They've created this mess. And, oh, they just cannot wait to see it go boom, to see it go pop, to see their mastery, to see their creation come alive. Doesn't it seem that way? I mean, every one of these crises that they create, every one of these situations that they manufacture, and for what reason? Simply put. To cause division, dissension, and distrust. That's what it's about. Pure and simple. So we're going to talk about that. Also, the school closure how-to book. It's been put out by the good folks at the Broad Foundation, whose mission is, as stated on their website, transforming K-12 urban public education through better governance, management, labor relations, and competition. Yes, we're gonna heap on those urbans. We're gonna go after the urbans, you know, those people. We're gonna heap competition on the urbans. Yet in the schools where the very wealthy, where their kids go, competition not so much. Small class sizes? Oh, you bet you're behind. Oh, yes. Grill and drill testing? No. More project-based, more experiential. I'm sensing that two Americas thing. Very, very much so. Also, no sinkholes today. No new sinkholes today in Harrisburg. So that's another day of praying our infrastructure doesn't crumble from underneath our feet. Working. So, hey, good stuff. Congratulations. The prayer is keeping our bridges up, the ground beneath our feet. And, well, of course, the buildings from crumbling on top of us. Good. And the attacks on workers' rights, as we saw in Wisconsin and Ohio, Michigan and Indiana, well, they are full bore, full tilt boogie underway right now in Missouri. But rest assured, corporatists, same insanity right here in our very own Pennsylvania General Assembly. So it's working. The national plan. It's just that we get the book a little late. And you know, when we went 2 years ago to Wisconsin, when we were sleeping in the Capitol, when we were broadcasting from inside the Capitol, I was telling you then, look, all of this stuff is a national plan. It didn't take a genius to figure this out. It didn't take a rocket scientist, didn't take any clairvoyant. But I said, look, it's coming. It's all coming this way. Because the big moneyed interests, this is what they want. The front groups, and most people hadn't heard of ALEC. We were talking about this. These are the people who are putting the game plan together. This is where the book came from. And now ALEC, pretty much a household word. Everyone knows who they are, knows the destruction that they've caused. But here again, the big money and interest keep plowing into it. So we're going to talk about that. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com as well. I do answer all emails personally. So big breaking news today. Chuck Hagel confirmed. I guess he will be the next Secretary of Defense. Yes. The final vote, 58-41, four Republicans joined with the Democrats to vote for Hagel. Mike Jonas from Nebraska, Thad Cochran from Mississippi, Richard Shelby from Alabama, and surprise, Rand Paul. Not that it mattered, but Rand Paul, who had evidently voted against the cloture vote, then voted for him. Interesting stuff. Other big news today, Chris Christie joined a large number a growing number of Republican governors from across the nation in accepting the Obamacare. At the same time, while a Republican in Congress is putting forth a bill to make it illegal, which kind of just makes me scratch my head and go, well, you know who's running amok in the GOP. But Christie has said, look, you know, I'm not going to set up the exchange, but it makes sense. It makes sense for the people. And this is what's important. And this is why I know Christie is in for 2016. He said it's simple. We are putting people first. He said, we have an opportunity to ensure that an even greater number of New Jerseyans who are at or near the poverty line have access to critical health services beginning in January 2014. He said that the program will mean expanding Medicaid will ensure that New Jersey taxpayers will see their dollars maximized. And, you know, you go down the list, you know, whether it's Rick Scott in Florida, whether it's Arizona or Michigan or New Mexico or North Dakota or Ohio or Nevada, Republicans are coming on board. Why? I think they want to be elected. I think they, some of them get, you know, it really is about we, the people. But, you know, Christie's decision does not come without consequence. The Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, they're not going to invite him to their little party. Sad. Not going to be able to speak. And I wonder if they're going to even let him walk in the door. And you look at this stuff and you go, we're going to be very petulant and punish you for doing what's in the interest of 300,000 people in New Jersey. Something our governor here turned his back on, some 700,000 people. And as I've been saying from the very beginning, what should happen is we should be mobilizing those 700,000 people, mobilizing them, their families, their neighbors, and saying, hey, whoa, 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 we vote. And one-term Tom, that's what you're going to be. But the wealth class in this country has done such an amazing job. I mean, really, they have. They've done such a masterful job of divide and conquer. They've done such a masterful job of pitting group against group, and especially in the working class. And I always go back to Jay Gould, who said I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. Here's a perfect example of that. And what gets me is it's at a time when you're talking about record profits for corporations, you're talking about Wall Street fat and happy, you're talking about the street is back. CEO pay through the roof, stocks, bonuses, oh boy, things are wonderful. And you look at the information put out today by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation that pointed out that banks in 2012 had their most profitable year since 2006. Banks made nearly $35 billion in the last quarter of last year, bringing their yearly total. Oh, you're gonna cringe when you hear this. $141 billion in profit. Those are a lot of that. The fees that you pay, the ATM swipes, all of that stuff. And it leaves me scratching my head and going, we've made these people bigger. You know, they caused that massive collapse. And I know, oh, Rick, you keep talking about the banksters and all the thieves who crashed our economy. That was so 4 years ago. It's over. Get over it. Get over it. You know, we're moving on. The wealthy are okay. But here's my problem. I know people who still have not recovered from that. And I know they keep telling me there's a recovery and the recovery's happened and then the recession's over. I know people who are still in depression. I know people who didn't share in the recession and I know in the recovery. And I know folks who, you know, there's a lot of voices out there saying it happened. And yeah, it's great. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. I ask the everyday working staff, people like me, you better off? By allowing these banks to get bigger and bigger and bigger, we better off? And today, Elizabeth Warren was talking to Ben Bernanke. And, you know, it's one of those moments where you, at some point you go, yeah, we're giving these too big to fail banks more. And, you know, she's going through this whole process. Should we be doing this stuff? And he's like, no, we shouldn't be. Yet here we are. You got these banksters. They've been more profitable since 2006. $141 billion they raked in. And yet what we're talking about Now, understand, the financial sector sucks about $635 billion out of the economy each and every year. Because we've got to make the wealthy, well, wealthier, right? So what do we hear coming out of D.C.? And I love this messaging. This is beautiful. The right has got they focus test this stuff. They've got really smart people thinking these gimmicks up. It's only 3 cents. Couldn't you cut 3 cents out of your budget? Huh? Couldn't you, at your kitchen table, couldn't you get 3 cents out of every dollar? Couldn't you if you had to, if you really wanted to? I think back to what Joe Scarnati said. I'm not a huge, I don't like to quote him very often, but I think he was right on this. He said, look, they sat on budget after budget the last several years, and they cut through the fat, they cut through the muscle, they cut into the bone. We are in the bone. The low-lying fruit, not there. Any cuts that are going to happen are going to cause real pain to real people. And before we start talking about, oh, it's only 3 cents, well, whose 3 cents are we talking about? Is it 3 cents out of the $1.50 per day that someone who needs food stamps gets? Is that what we're going to talk about? Or is it the 3 cents of the billions of dollars that we give away in special interest in loopholes that go all over the world? Is that the 3 cents? I can talk about that. But they love to couch things in terms of, oh, it's just like your kitchen table. Because, well, we could all come up with 3 cents, right? It's just 3 cents. It's 30 cents out of $10. It's $3 out of 100. You could do that, right? 30 bucks out of 1,000. You could do that. Just 30 bucks a week if you make $1,000 a year or $1,000 a week. You could do that. What if you couldn't? Because we're into the bone. Joe Scarnati said so. So what are we cutting? Well, we're going to cut education programs, which we've been doing quite often. We're going to cut programs that help go to the least among us, the most desperate, the most vulnerable. Why? Because they're easy. It's easy to kick those people while they're down. No problem. It's going to go to job training. It's going to go to cuts in education, healthcare. You name it, they're going after it. Head Start. Part of the thing's going to be cut. Programs that, for women's health, cut. And these are groups that don't have high power, high paid lobbyists. And this is what frustrates me when you see that nearly 600,000 people could be cut from the SNAP program, the WIC, food for women, infants, and children, you know, milk and base, just basic stuff. It infuriates me. Yet, no rational discussion of how we really get out of this mess has been allowed to happen. And it should really tick all of us off. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Rick Smith Show. You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Texas Governor Rick Perry recently got an earful of protest from people outraged that Perry is refusing to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Here's some of what happened as the Texas Organizing Project disrupted a fundraiser at the Republican Capitol Hill Club.
Actually, those people are from Alabama.
Governor Rick Perry, we're down here to let you know we're for losing money because you are blocking people's access to affordable health care. It's a dumb move, Governor Perry. It's just dumb.
7 million people in Texas have no health insurance. The Texas Organizing Project says that Perry's refusing to expand Medicaid means Texas will pass up $78 billion in federal funds. That will leave 2 million Texans uninsured who otherwise would be covered under Medicaid. Filipino oil rig workers are touring the country to expose inhumane working conditions. Jesse Russell reports.
A Louisiana-based company is facing a class action lawsuit due to alleged poor working conditions for Filipino workers. The workers say recruiters for Grand Isle Shipyards offered wages of between $16 and $24 per hour, as well as room and board, if those workers would go to the United States. Instead, the workers say in the lawsuit that the actual pay started at $5.50 per hour, and they were provided with poor living quarters, and had funds taken out of their paychecks to cover the cost of living. If workers expressed discontent with their situation, they said, the company would threaten to have them deported. The number of Filipino workers now in the lawsuit is nearly 100. Grand Isle Shipyard made headlines last November when an explosion on a Black Elk Energy platform killed 3 Filipino workers. The workers were subcontracted by Grand Isle. The Filipino workers are currently on a tour of the United States in an effort to bring attention to their situation. This past weekend, they were visiting Gulf states, where they spoke about the conditions they allegedly experienced working for the company.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I know many of you are going to be interested in this next subject. Pennsylvania sits within a day's drive of 60% of the nation's population. Every year, nearly $500 billion worth of goods and services move through our state transportation system. Transportation is the bloodstream of our economy. If it fails, our economy fails. However, as you know, the average bridge in our state is 51 years old.
Good thing today in Harrisburg, not a sinkhole today, so that's a good day. Prayer is working. Thank you. Your prayers are going to good use. 2012, year of the Bible. Thank you, state legislature. I appreciate it. This way, you know, the roads stay up. The bridges are fine. Buildings aren't crumbling, right? We don't need investing in things. Absolutely not. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Interesting story again out of Missouri. This Democrat there in Missouri, a guy named Jeff Rorta. He has introduced a piece of legislation kind of mocking, much like the Republicans did, putting forth, I think they were serious though, putting forth a piece of legislation saying that if you introduce any gun safety bill, you're going to jail. We're going to make it illegal, throw you in jail. Well, Jeff Rorta introduced a piece of legislation on Friday, that said, you know what? If you propose any anti-worker piece of legislation, to jail you go. No paycheck deceptions, no rights at work, none of that. Right to jail with you. I wish we could get a guy to do that here. So I've got Pennsylvania State Representative Eddie Dave Pyshynski on the line. Eddie, thanks for taking time for me.
Good to be with you again, Rick.
Wouldn't it be nice to be able to start all these folks who are assaulting workers and assaulting their rights? Wouldn't it be nice to be able to throw some of them in jail, I think.
You're not getting extreme now, are you?
Trying not to, but, I mean, you look at this stuff, it gets outrageous. I saw a co-sponsorship memo put out by the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association asking the Republicans to co-sponsor a bill that would make organizing, talking to people, stalking, and make it a crime to do any type of organizing.
Yeah, I saw the same thing, stalking. They're talking about union members can't use weapons of mass destruction. It's really absurd. The whole thing is absurd. That particular group, the extremist group that has taken over the Republican Party, really are destroying the art of negotiating, the art of getting things done, the art of working together. These guys are just crazy, and I mean that sincerely. It's truly, it's disheartening. And I think that what's happening with, let's say, for example, the president, I know that a lot of the Republicans are saying that, you know, the president should stay in his office and meet with those people and not go to the people. The reason the president is going throughout this country is to spread the message of the truth so that everyone gets the right message. you know, he's tried it with Boehner and Cantor and
McConnell.
McConnell, yeah. And come on, McConnell, on the day that President Obama was being inaugurated, brought his boys together and said, this is it, we're going to make him a one-term governor. So the president has tried several times. And I'm not saying that he shouldn't continue to try. I'm not saying he shouldn't continue to try to use Joe Biden like he did or others. But the fact of the matter is, this is a self-imposed disaster. The sequester, this is totally unnecessary, a manufactured crisis. It's easy to sit in Washington when you're a millionaire and make these decisions because you don't feel a darn thing. But if you're that defense worker, or if you're that teacher, or if you're that pre-K student, you're feeling it, and you're going to feel it hard. But, you know, this is a diabolical plan. And the plan is you make it so difficult for the president, make him look bad, but in the process, you're hurting this country.
Yep.
You're hurting the people of this country. And then you're destroying the economic recovery that we have, and then you'll turn around and you'll tell everybody it was the president's fault. These guys, they're nuts.
Well, part of me says, you know, maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe, you know, you go back to it and you look at, you know, during the old labor saying, you know, when your stomach gets empty, your head gets right. Maybe we need to feel a little bit of pain to rouse people out of their coma, to get folks into the street, get people constantly hounding these people to get them on the right track. I mean, what's it going to take? I've been saying maybe we need to have something like a Tea Party of the working class of this country rise up and say, there's something seriously going on, and we've got to right this ship.
Well, Rick, I think you're onto something. A lot of folks talk to me about it, how bad things are. I said, you have to understand, every day is a human struggle. Each day, each one of us have to make countless decisions. Well, democracy is the most difficult form of government because all of us have the right of speech, our own opinion. And you're right. You know, the unions have worked so hard, not for unions, ladies and gentlemen, but for Americans, because as the union worker rose on the quality status of pay and benefits and health care, so did the non-union guy.
Yep.
So if you're a middle-class guy and you're working 40 hours a week and you have a 30-minute lunch break and you have health care and you have – come on, gang. That was done through the blood, sweat, and tears of union people who fought hard.
My grandfather.
Yes, well, I'm a little older than you. My dad was part of the United Mine Workers. He told me the stories of what it was like. The union bosses, not the union bosses, the company bosses were brutal. The miners were nothing more than a widget.
Yep.
And he would tell me the story when a miner got killed in the mines. They'd get a wagon drawn by the mules. They'd throw the miner on the wagon, take the wagon to the house, dump the guy on the porch and leave. That was it.
Yeah, I've told this story a couple of times, and it's right in line with what you've said. I volunteered as a big brother for about 10 years, and the kid that I was matched with, we went up to the Lackawanna coal mines up there and did the tour, and they took us down, and they've got, you know, little displays set up. And this kid, who was at the time 8 years old, walked up to a doll that, you know, was set up to display what that kid did, an 8-year-old in the mines.
They're called the breaker boys.
Exactly.
Yeah. And don't forget the little girls were forced into these sweatshops, into these factories, locked in.
Yeah. Sure. But what he was saying is, you know, this kid had a 50% fatality rate because the door would come swinging open and crush him into the wall as the carts were coming down, because his job was to make sure that door was open and closed. And exactly what you said, the foreman's job was to take up the beaten, bloody, broken body of this child, throw it on the coal cart, take it up to the top, wagon it to the house, and throw it at the door. So the bones knocked against the door, and that's how the family found out that somebody's home.
Yeah.
And that's, sadly, the history that we don't learn in school, but sadly what I think we're going to, at some point, potentially return to.
Well, I think, you know, I talked about the picks and shovel movement. You know, that's where we are now. And frankly, you know, if Romney became president, you would see exactly what we're talking about return, because that was the goal. People will have jobs, but you will not have a future. You will have a job, but you will not have quality of life. You will have a job, but your benefits will be minimal. And I'll tell you what, this is the year 2013. We've come too far. All we're looking for here is fairness, balance. And I think that's what the president wants. So it's pretty difficult for me to understand why Big Oil, Exxon, which that company is bigger than, is I think the 16th largest country in the world, why they would need any kind of billion-dollar incentives. We give the, I think, the six or seven oil companies over $50 billion incentives. You mean to tell me they got to have that? What, you mean to tell me they can't help our country out right now? Give that back to the country.
But Eddie, you know, it's only $3. It's only 3 cents on a dollar. This sequestration, it's not the big thing that they're saying. It's only 3 cents. Eddie, you could save 3 cents on a dollar if you really wanted to.
Absolutely. And you know what else? I know the people that I'm associated with, and I've traveled enough in this magnificent country of ours. If the president and this Congress and Senate were working together and they came to the people and they said, listen, we can turn this country around in 5 years if we do the following. We got to raise your taxes, you know, say $500 each. And the corporations are going to now be up to 30% instead of getting away with their 15%. And we're going to eliminate the loopholes. So if you're buying a yacht, guess what? You're going to have to pay the right tax, or a jet. You're going to have to pay the right. You know, the American people would say okay, because they could see that we're working together, that there's an end to this problem.
But if you were using it, investing it, and getting people back to work, you know, I don't even think you'd need to do that. The reality is I think you could. We are borrowing money at basically nothing. We could put people back to work, and as the economy grows, as you grow the economy, the debt to GDP ratio goes down. So just by getting people back to work, you have solved a good portion of your deficit and debt problems.
Well, again, the president said that between transportation, research, education. You're putting literally millions of people back to work. But again, that goes against the Republican Party, the plan that they've had, this diabolical plan. If that happens, then Obama looks good, then the Democrats look good, then the Democrats have a chance to regain power. It's bull.
It's all about starve the beast.
And,
you know,
yep.
You know, you go back to the Grover Norquist quote, I'd like to drag government into the bathtub and drown it in the bathtub.
Well, the people are now going to begin to understand not everything about government is bad. And I think all your listeners, of course you cut fat. Of course you become efficient. But let me tell you what, the states can't survive without the federal government, and the federal government can't survive without the states. It takes a country.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, but I really think that this election, I think most people saw that. They saw that I believe Obama was trying to do the right things. And I think that as each day goes by and you see what the Republicans are trying to do now, like here in Pennsylvania, they want to change electoral college. Let's steal the election one way, shape, or form. Can't be a fair way, a fair game. It's got to be something we can steal. You can't trust them.
No.
You can't trust the Republic. I'm sorry to say, with the power structure they have now, with who's in charge, with who's running the ship for the Republican Party, you can't trust them.
I'm right there with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Eddie Dave Pyshynski, Pennsylvania State Legislator. You know, the other day, Joe Scarnati, State Senator, said that, you know, we've cut through the fat, we've cut through the muscle, we're into the bone. Any more cutting are going to cause real serious harm. And, you know, pretty much saying, look, you know, this ideology of, you know, it's only 3 cents. It's only a little bit going to cause real serious harm. And I don't know that Scarnati is this great liberal.
No. And he is 100% correct. Ever since Rendell was in there, even before we had the collapse in 2008, 2009, he was already cutting the size of government. So we've had 5 years of austerity, buddy, and you can't go any further.
Yeah.
Now services are definitely being strained, and you're hurting a lot of people. You're hurting people, you're hurting kids, and it's unnecessary.
And that's what he said. He went on to say, you know, we can't do any more cutting and have any measure of compassion. And I look at that in that statement, I go, well, the reality is I generally don't see the people doing this. You know, when the governor eviscerated the general assistance budget, when he kicked 41,000 people off of a basic, when he kicked almost 90,000 kids off of Medicaid, I don't see there being any compassion there. So it's not surprising to me.
No, you're 100% right. There is no heart on that group. There is no heart. By the way, the Medicaid expansion. If Governor Corbett did that here, he's giving you a false line. We would receive over $40 billion from the federal government, number one. Number two, that would put a decent health care to approximately 500,000 to 600,000 Pennsylvanians. Some of those people in that would qualify for Medicaid would also qualify for Medicare. And under Medicaid for the first 3 years, we're getting 100% back from the federal government. In Medicare, we get 54% back. So the governor's saying, see, now we have to pay more money because we're taking these people and they're going to go on to Medicare. We can't afford that. What he's losing a sight of and what he's not telling anybody, if you're going to have 500,000 new patients, that means supplies. That means jobs. That means those people are paying their taxes. It also means less people on the county dole. So now your human services budget on the county is lessened. We would save hundreds of millions of dollars on that. And, you know, uncompensated care. That's what the government, both state and federal, pays the hospital for people who have no insurance. Well, now they'll have insurance. More people will. Therefore, less uncompensated care is coming out. In the long run, at worst, it's a wash.
Wow, you see, that's really way more complicated than... No! I mean, that doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, Eddie. No, fits really well.
Yeah, I know, it gets crazy, but right now there's eight Republican governors. In fact, Christie from New Jersey, I think, became number eight.
Number nine.
Oh, number nine, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, even Scott from down in Florida had to eat his words because they're realizing that their state's going to provide some health care for a lot of folks, and they're actually going to make money on the thing eventually.
Yeah, and I look at Christie. I mean, he's basically in for 2016 because he came out and said, I'm doing it because it's good for the people of New Jersey.
Isn't that what we're supposed to do as legislators?
No.
We're supposed to try to...
No. See, no fits on a bumper sticker. No.
Solve problems. You got to try to solve problems. But in order to do that, people have to come together. And it's just, it's criminal. It really is criminal.
You know, I look at this budget, all of this stuff that's being talked about. We're going to have to sell the liquor stores, booze for books and shots for tots. We're going to fund education with liquor dollars. Doesn't make any sense to me. A lot of what this governor's done doesn't make a lot of sense to me unless you look at it from who's benefited.
You follow the money.
Absolutely.
Follow the money, who's benefiting, then you'll see. And the people on the short end will be the people of Pennsylvania.
And here's what infuriates me. I look at our infrastructure, which, as you've pointed out, we could create thousands of jobs in this Commonwealth and across the nation if we just, you know, just said, you know what, we're gonna upgrade our infrastructure to today's, not even invest into the future, just to make it usable today, structurally sound for right now. We could put thousands of people back to work immediately. Yet our governor, on his own commission's report, who said we need about $6.5 billion over the next 5 years, he has proposed a whopping 1.8.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can think of, and maybe you've got a better take on this, is if we can get people to work for free, and maybe even to get them, you know, because the Commonwealth Foundation and these Tea Party think tanks love to say, if we did away with prevailing wage, we could save 30%. And if you do the math, the only way you save 30% by repealing prevailing wage is if the employees pay you 20% back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's the plan.
Well, their plan is to deceive the people. Deceive the people, get what they want, make the money they want, feather their nest. That's what it's all about. That's the plan.
See, now that's pretty simple. That would fit on a bumper sticker.
That would fit on a bumper sticker. Yes, it would.
And the other thing I got to get to, the pensions. You know, I've been talking to a number of teachers, and I'm hoping that the radical changes that this governor is proposing, not only the radical changes for these people's pensions, but also for the taxpayer who are going to get massively screwed. And I don't know if you saw Keystone Research Center and Treasurer McCord had an event today where they talked about this is a screw job for taxpayers and pensioners. This can't go through.
Well, I didn't see what Treasurer McCord said. He's a very bright fellow. He knows his stuff. But I can tell you that, again, let's make these points. First of all, the defined benefit, which is the guaranteed pension for life, That formula was working all through the 90s. It was over 130% fully funded until the government started tinkering with that formula. When they changed the formula from 2.0 to 2.5, and they extended things there, and then they also allowed the state not to pay their fair share for 10 years, those are two major contributing factors of why we're a little low on the money.
And not to mention a couple of, you know, big recessions.
Well, we had the biggest recession since the collapse of 1929. But my point to you is, if government didn't touch that formula and they put in their share that they were supposed to, we wouldn't even be talking about pensions.
Yeah, but so, we had to give out tax breaks. You know, that's how we get elected, Eddie. You know that.
Of course. Well, there's not much coming out now. But let me just say that, by the way, it would be interesting to find out how much money this governor has given tax breaks to the big boys. It would be astonishing.
The one study I saw said $2.4 million last year.
$2.4 billion.
Sorry.
There you go.
Sorry,
yeah.
I can't even get that word out of my mouth.
And keep in mind, he's not collecting the money that he should be collecting from your volume severance tax.
Right.
Okay. That's worth $300 to $500 million. He hasn't done anything truly on the Delaware loophole. We passed a very anemic law last year on closing the Delaware loophole.
Yeah.
That did not work.
No.
That's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. The Amazon loophole, hundreds of millions of dollars. The depreciation, all taken in 1 year by the big companies, worth hundreds of millions. You're talking over $1 billion, some people estimate, $2 billion that he could be bringing into the Treasury that he's not going after. That's the part that's sickening. You know, it's just putting the pressure on the little guy.
Yeah, but we did save like $20 million kicking those 70,000 of Pennsylvania's most vulnerable to the curb. We got rid of that.
Well, remember, a lot of these guys don't see that. They don't live there. They don't feel that. See? So when you're insulated from what the real world is, I suppose it's easy, you know, not to feel anything.
This is why we've got to get to the streets. We've got to be calling people like you early, often. Hey, you're doing a great job, or hey, you're not. We've got to be on top of this stuff.
The people drive the polls. The people drive the legislation. The people drive the legislators. If the people say no, that legislator is going to say no.
Unless they're a bunch of right-wing ideologues who, well, they're in the pockets of, well, that's a rant for another day. Eddie, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate your time.
Rick, thank you very much. Keep up the good work, and don't give up. Don't give up, man.
I appreciate it.
The good will always overtake the bad.
Good over evil. Very good.
Good over evil.
That'll fit on a bumper sticker. Thanks so much.
Thanks, buddy.
Pennsylvania State Representative Eddie Dave Pashinsky. Quick break. Right back. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Drowning in crap lies. Say you will pay and resume the service mine. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job you're looking for. Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Any remake of the 1950s movie The Bad Seed should cast Monsanto in the title role. This biotech behemoth has a monopolistic grip on the creation and sale of frankenseeds. The seeds of corn, cotton, soybeans, and other crops that have had genetically modified organisms spliced into the natural DNA structure by corporate lab techs. Why insert risky, inadequately tested GMOs into our food supply? To produce crops that can survive heavier doses of toxic pesticides, specifically pesticides marketed by Monsanto. The corporation gets more profit, we get more pesticides and new man-made health risks. That's enough to make a truly horrific movie about the bad seed, but Monsanto has added to the horror by almost sadistically applying another level of its monopoly power. Having patented the GMO technology, the corporation asserts that when the plants grow in a farmer's field and subsequently produce their own seeds, those second-generation seeds do not belong to the farmer, but are Monsanto's private property. Thus, the seed-saving ethic that has sustained agriculture all around the world for centuries has been decreed illegal to benefit Monsanto. And the profiteering giant prowls the country to find and sue any of its own customers who dare practice the sensible art of seed-saving. The bully has 75 staffers and a $10 million a year budget dedicated to monitoring, investigating, prosecuting, and intimidating small farmers. Even if some second-generation GMO seeds cropped up in their fields inadvertently. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is a case of one deep-pocket corporation perverting patent law in order to monopolize the sale of seeds, gouge thousands of farmers, and endanger both human health and the environment. To fight the ongoing horror of this bad seed, go to organicconsumers.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
They believe in teachers' unions. We believe in teachers.
What they do, they smile in your face. All the time they want to take your place. The backstabbers, backstabbers. They smile in your face.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. This weekend, big stuff going on. Don't want to miss it. Keystone Progress is having their Pennsylvania Progressive Summit Friday and Saturday at the Harrisburg Hilton. Go to keystoneprogress.org for more information there. And also on Saturday night, 100,000 Poets and Musicians for Change are having their protest music sing-along at the Cornerstone Coffee House there in Camp Hill. Going to make a stop there as well. If you want more information on either event, you can contact me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. You know, Eddie Paschinski, a guy I really like him. He's a good dude, you know. Somebody who is going to stand up and fight for the little guy. Because, you know, as he pointed out, that's where he came from. And the thing that gets me is this. One of those things that I think about often. You think about the people who are in Congress right now, the people who are generally in the state legislatures. How many of those people came from a working class background? How many of those people punched clocks? How many of those people actually, you know, went to the cupboards and there was nothing there? And I was thinking about this afternoon, you know, remembering, you know, where I grew up, where, you know, we were all dirt poor. And if it weren't for certain programs, if it weren't for school lunch programs, if it weren't for food stamps for quite a large number of the people in my neighborhood, what would it have been like? And I listened to the right tell me, well, you know, it's only 3 cents on a dollar. That's all. It's only 3 cents. You could cut 3 cents if you really wanted to. Couldn't you? And I go back to those days. Because I was thinking about this again this afternoon, and I'm grateful that I never have to look into the eyes of my children and know that they're hungry and that there's nothing I can do. To this point in my life, I've never had that happen, and I hope it never does. And I don't think any parent should ever have to be in that position. In the wealthiest country in the world, there should be no one going hungry. Yet you look at the numbers, what was the statistic? Some 18 million are food insecure, hungry. Even with all the money that we're spending on food stamps because people aren't getting them. And the benefit isn't enough. And I go back to, you know, you look at the people who have taken the food stamp challenge. And it's like $3 a day. How many people can live on $3 a day? My wife came home from the store the other day, and she goes, here's a bag of apples. And she goes, this one apple was $3. One apple. And I was thinking about that. I'm going, here's this one apple. And she's got a bag of them that my kids are going to, they're just going to snack after school. They're going to go through. That one apple represents an entire day of what someone's going to have to survive on. And you go, explain to me how that's right, how that's moral. And I guess that my problem is, and I've said this before, I could easily be a rabid right-winger. Hey, you should pay yourself a pair of bootstraps. I did it, see? See how wonderful I am? When the reality is there was a lot of help along the way. There were a lot of government programs. There was a lot of smart policy, sound investment that went into me being where I am today. Yeah, it was hard work. Yeah, I got the hip and the back and the knees to show for years of hard manual labor. But along the way, there was a lot of... Along the way, there was generation before me and a generation before them that fought to make that job that I was doing a family-sustaining job, where if you made smart choices, you got ahead. The sad reality is those jobs are being destroyed rapidly. And that ability... Well, that ability to rise up is being squashed back down because we're redistributing the wealth in such a rapid fashion. And this argument that it's only 3 cents. You could do it, right? It's only 3 cents. Only 3%, that's it. 3 cents is nothing. After year after year after year of only 3 cents. It's only this cut. It's only that cut. I love the argument, well, you know, we're spending more than we did last year. And, you know, someone told me that today. Well, you know, we are spending more than we did last year. You know that, don't you? I go, of course I do. And I made 30 cents more than I did last year. I'm going to make 30 cents more than I did last year. Did the price of gas go up? Did the price of food go up? Did the economy expand? Did any of that happen? But hey, I made 30 cents more than I did last year. You know, again, it's a nice talking point, but it fails in the reality test. And then you go, well, what is the need? And I think Eddie Day Pashinsky pointed it out with this Medicaid expansion and all of the ripple effect that goes into saving money as a whole, not just the bumper sticker. No. But, you know, this plan's going to get money into the hospitals, it's going to get money into taking care of people, create jobs in the community. And then there's all that ripple stuff. People aren't going to be collecting unemployment. People aren't going to be using social services at the county level, at the state level. All that stuff goes away, which is how you, in my view, you do pull back. Because, look, I'm not an advocate for continual debt spending. That's not sustainable. But I'm very much a Keynesian in the idea that when the economy needs help, when the pump needs priming, you do that. Government is the one who can, we can borrow money at almost nothing right now. And you pump that into the economy, you get people back to work building roads and bridges, and guess what? Other investment happens. And as that investment continues to happen, as that the economy grows and the size of your GDP grows, guess what happens to your debt? It starts to go down naturally. And if we need to bring this back to kitchen table economics, you know, pretty simple. Let's say you bought a house, it's $100,000. You're making 50 grand a year. You're making 25 grand a year. You have a 4-to-1 debt ratio, right? You owe 4 times as much as you make. You have a 4-to-1 debt ratio. If you get a job that makes $50,000 a year, you have just cut your debt in half. Pretty simple, right? But yet all I keep seeing out of Washington, all I keep seeing out of Harrisburg, all I keep seeing out of state legislatures across the country is, well, we need to pull back. We need to constrict our economy. We need to make things smaller. Make it smaller. Make the economy smaller. So you know what happens? Our debt grows. This austerity, these triggers, this is a sequestration. Let's say this happens. And you pull that money out of the economy, the $1.2 trillion over the next 10 years. You yank it out. Your economy shrinks. Guess what happens to your debt? Naturally, your debt goes up. Because understand, and this is the part that I'm struggling for people who don't get it. Our debt is stuff we owe already. We owe it regardless of what we do. It's like our mortgage. We got to pay it. And the more we shrink our economy, the more we shrink the amount of money that we put into it, and the more we make desperate further down the line at the state level, at the local level, the worse things are going to be. But understand, this is all by design. And it's a beautifully designed plan. Masterfully designed. And the Tea Party loves to talk about redistribution of wealth. It's what you're seeing. An absolute redistribution of wealth scheme. Taking from you, taking from your children's education, taking from healthcare, taking from all of these, and giving to the very, very well-to-do. And in the process, angering every person against their government, so we call for them, get rid of those bums, no government can't do anything. Let's put private corporations in charge. I mean, we have seen this movie time and time again, and I love people who tell me, I'm a capitalist. Then why do you want government involved in anything? Why do you want tax breaks? You should pay for the infrastructure. We should, and trust me, there are folks who think we should pay bills for everything we do. You drive on the highway, toll roads. You go to school, you pay for it. Everything is in conservative world. In corporatist world, because I don't even think I don't even know that there are any true conservatives left. I think the conservatives have been taken over by corporatists because you know, the trough is there. So the corporatists get profit. It's all about the profit. It's all about how much money we can put into our pockets by not investing in roads and bridges or education or healthcare or even technology or any of this stuff. You know, I often wonder. What would have happened had Eisenhower run into this kind of austerity idea? This idea that, sorry, we can't build the interstate highway system. Sorry, can't do it. Which saw a massive boom across this country of business interest. And what about the space program? You know, what if, well, you know, Kennedy, they said, sorry, we can't invest in it. And you think about all of the products, you think about all the industries that spurred up from the investment in government to go to space. I know, I've heard it before. Private sector would have done it eventually. Well, they wouldn't have. They wouldn't have thrown that kind of money into it. There are some things that only we can do. Collectively, all of us. And to me, these debt fights, all of this sequestration, all of these crises, all of this stuff is designed to do one thing. And it's not about the debt. It's not about money. It's not about cutting any. It's not. It's about destroying our government. It's about destroying the ability of we the people to use our government to control what happens in this country. You know, we've gone through years, 30, 40 years now of we need deregulation. Do we have any less regulations than we had back in 1980? The answer is no. What's happened is we've seen massive re-regulation. And those regulations, who have they benefited? Well, they've benefited the well-to-do. They've benefited big multinational corporations at the expense of the little guy. Because the big boys, they can afford the lobbyists. They can afford the high-powered, high-priced lobbyists. And they can afford to constantly be in our ear, to constantly say, you know, it's that guy's fault over there. It's that welfare person, or it's that person who gets that Section 8 housing, or it's those urbans. It's the urbans. I loved that frame from the 2012 presidential election. Loved it. The Romney Ryan, it's the urbans. It's those urban people. And we know what they meant. It's the minorities. But that's to me, the 2012 election was really one of those moments where you go, this is the stuff that they've been saying to each other for years and just now feel emboldened to come out and say it. And now we're at a point with this whole sequestration thing. And look, it's going to happen. We're going to see where this goes. And we'll see and we'll see where the pain and the suffering falls. And I would argue, and I it doesn't take a genius, rocket science, no clairvoyant, that the pain will be disproportionately felt by those who are unable to fight back and unable to be heard or seen. And they will suffer in silence because they don't have that voice. And that really angers me. Because if you look at what's going on, we've seen a massive redistribution of wealth. You look at the Bush tax handouts. You look at the fact that I just saw this analysis of the U.S. Public Interest Research Group that they put out, that the Delaware loophole type things, not just Delaware but across the globe, these tax havens that we've allowed to be set up have cost state governments in this country in 2011, the year that they have data for, have cost $40 billion. And you go, well, you know, $40 billion over 10 years, that's $400 billion. That's a third of the sequester. That's what it costs state governments, the one loophole, this one series of loopholes that we allow them to do on the state level. That's not even the federal loopholes, which is why I so badly wanted to see the Romney tax returns. Not because he did anything wrong, but because I want to know all the loopholes. I want to know the creativity of the person who did his taxes. Because he, to me, would have been the litmus test for all of them. Because he was them. Pretty simple stuff. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, therickschmidtshow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. Also, if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app. Take the program on the go. Any feedback, questions, comments, things I've said, things I shouldn't have said, ideas, stories, you can email me, rick@therickschmidtshow.com. We're going to take a quick break. Back with the second hour, more about transportation. Back after this. Stick around.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Texas Governor Rick Perry recently got an earful of protest from people outraged that Perry is refusing to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Here's some of what happened as the Texas Organizing Project disrupted a fundraiser at the Republican Capitol Hill Club.
Actually, those people are from Alabama.
Do you bequeath our next generation of leaders debt and illness? Healthcare is a human right.
I'm from Houston, Texas as well, and we have the highest rank of the women that doesn't have health care and insurance. It's 34% of women that are uninsured. We deserve to live just like Washington, D.C. deserves to live as well.
Our Governor Rick Perry, we're down here to let you know we're from Texas, and when you get home, when you get back to the state of Texas, you need to make a plan for the 7 million who don't have health insurance.
The cost of that is borne by our hospitals that are losing money because you are blocking people's access to affordable health care. It's a dumb move, Governor Perry. It's just dumb.
7 million people in Texas have no health insurance. The Texas Organizing Project says that Perry's refusing to expand Medicaid means Texas will pass up $78 billion in federal funds. That will leave 2 million Texans uninsured who otherwise would be covered under Medicaid. Filipino oil rig workers are touring the country to expose inhumane working conditions. Jesse Russell reports.
A Louisiana-based company is facing a class action lawsuit due to alleged poor working conditions for Filipino workers. The workers say recruiters for Grand Isle Shipyards offered wages of between $16 and $24 per hour, as well as room and board, if those workers would go to the United States. Instead, the workers say in the lawsuit that the actual pay started at $5.50 per hour, and they were provided with poor living quarters, and had funds taken out of their paychecks to cover the cost of living. If workers expressed discontent with their situation, they said, the company would threaten to have them deported. The number of Filipino workers now in the lawsuit is nearly 100. Grand Isle Shipyard made headlines last November when an explosion on a Black Elk Energy platform killed 3 Filipino workers. The workers were subcontracted by Grand Isle. The Filipino workers are currently on a tour of the United States in an effort to bring attention to their situation. This past weekend, they were visiting Gulf states, where they spoke about the conditions they allegedly experienced working for the company.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith. Claustrophobia, hypochondria, xenophobia.
Don't sit next to me. No, no. I can't ride on public transportation. Are you kidding me? Buses? The Urbans are on the buses. I still love that frame. I mean, that is, you know, if anything came out of the binders of women that Romney said, and the Urbans, and of course the 47, there was just so much. It was a treasure trove of right-wing nonsensical. I really can't say the words that I'm actually thinking, so I probably should leave it at that. More right-wing debauchery, if you will. Looks like the Republicans are going to be going after prevailing wage again, because, you know, hey, when you have $6.5 billion of need and you propose $1.8 billion to fill that need, how are you going to do that? Well, I've been saying the best way to do it is, well, have the people work for free, and maybe get the workers to pay for you the privilege of having a job, much like the tax thing they passed last year, where the state income tax that you think you're paying to the state actually gets to be kept by your employer. That's a beautiful scheme in conservative world, which is why I've asked our good friend Abe Amoros with the Laborers International Union of North America to come talk to us. Abe, thanks for taking time for me.
Absolutely, Rick. Thank you.
So, $6.5 billion worth of need, according to the governor's very own Transportation Commission report, proposes $1.8 billion. What do you say to your members working for free or paying for the privilege?
It's absolutely preposterous what they're claiming there. First of all, you know, the $1.8 billion that he is proposing is not nearly enough to address the need. We have a $3.5 billion need today.
According to his report, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's when the report came out. If you look at the sliding scale over the next 5 years, it goes up on his report, $6.5 billion.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yep, you're absolutely right. And they're doing nothing about it. I mean, we still don't have anything in writing. We don't have a bill. We don't have a vehicle. All we still have is talk. And for every day that goes by, it's $1 million more per day.
Yep.
In terms of the need. And, I mean, listen, I'm deathly afraid, no pun intended, that something bad is going to happen. And we don't need another Minnesota. We keep talking about this over and over, and everyone keeps repeating that same mantra, yet there's no action. Where is the legislative action? Where is a bill? Where are the committee chairs? Why aren't we doing something about this now? And, you know, we have to get everybody jazzed up about it. And we need something immediately, or else something catastrophic is going to happen, and we simply cannot afford that. Because you can always replace concrete, but you can't replace people.
Yeah, but, you know, here's the thing. Maybe what it will take is one of the legislators, since they're all here in Harrisburg at one time or another, maybe if one of them was swallowed up by a sinkhole because of our crumbling infrastructure, maybe then the rest would get the message.
You know, sadly, that's what it might come down to. Sadly, unnecessarily, and reprehensibly. We cannot afford another day of inaction, yet no bill exists. We need to ask our legislators why no bill exists at this point and why there isn't additional pressure being put on the governor to take some sort of action and to address the need correctly with $6.5 billion rather than $1.8 billion, which is a drop in the bucket. And on top of that, Rick, they are now attacking prevailing wage as being part of the transportation budget, just like you said earlier. And as recently as yesterday, there were some legislators out of Lancaster County, the headquarters of the Association of Builders and Contractors, also known as ABC, bellyaching that, oh, no, we can't have prevailing wage as part of these projects because it costs too much. Now, they're always saying the same thing, that if you eliminate prevailing wage, the costs are going to come down and those savings are going to be passed along to taxpayers. I don't know of a single contractor on this planet that's not going to pocket the difference. And, you know, what really angers me is that they're not out there creating jobs either. They're simply not. They're hiring younger, more inexperienced people rather than the skilled craftsmen that should be on these jobs.
Well, that's the free market. And you know what? If the building falls down on your kid's head, well, so be it. At least we got a good deal, Abe.
Well, and that's the problem, Rick. That's right. They want everybody to work for $10 an hour without any health care benefits, without any pensions, and without the safety the safety parameters in place. I mean, this is getting absolutely ridiculous. And here's the problem, Rick. Here's the problem. People are buying it.
Yeah.
Well, people are buying it.
Because, look, I mean, and I've heard this. It's the talking point. We could save 30% on the cost of a building project. I've heard it hammered time and time again. The guy who heads the Tea Party think tank over here in Harrisburg, he says it. All of the ABC people say it. It's a lie, but it's what they say.
It's what they say.
30%. Right. You know, I sat down and actually did the math. When you look at the average building project, labor is about a quarter of the cost of the building.
That's exactly
about a quarter. So in order to save 30%, just me and my fifth grade math tells me that the employees are going to have to pay for the privilege of building that building in order to save 30%.
That's right. That's exactly right. They use the fuzzy math, as Gore used to say when he was running for president, and you know, they get away with it all the time. They get away with it all the time because we don't have a good retort to it. We have to repeat our messages over and over again, and the workers need to come out and stand up for themselves also. But more importantly, we have to get our listeners, our members, to really talk to their legislators and educate them. You know, I had an experience today, Rick, that I want to share with listeners. Went to see a freshman Democratic legislator. And we're talking about prevailing wage, we're talking about right-to-work legislation, anti-labor stuff, and she didn't have any idea of how this originated and why the other side is just so adamant about hurting the little guy. She just had absolutely no idea where we were coming from until we actually explained the history of the prevailing wage, what it does for workers, and the first thing out of her mouth was, well, you know, these costs are too high. We're going to have to compromise. So the other side has done a terrific job of spinning its message so that it gets our supporters to compromise.
Yeah,
what are we going to compromise on?
The sequester is the same thing. You know, I heard the messages, it's only 3 cents on a dollar.
Right.
If you really wanted to, Abe, you could save 3 cents on a dollar, couldn't you?
That's exactly right. They try to shame us. They really do. And we fall for it every time, Rick. And we have to stop falling for it because what they're espousing is not reasonable. It's out there to hurt people. That's what they want to do. They want to create this corporate culture that dictates the marketplace and forgets all about the workers, the guys and gals who make their living with their hands and their backs. They're the ones that are getting the shaft, and this isn't right.
Let me ask you, Abe, you know, you brought up this, you know, if we did, let's say we did away with prevailing wage. Let's say they got their wish and it happened. Have there been any places where this has happened? And do we, I mean, cause you generally want to look to places that have done it, what the results have been, what their experiences have been. Is there any history on this that we could look to, we could point to and say, you know, this is what our future is going to be?
That's exactly right. Just look at some of the southern states, Rick, and you'll see that their economies have tanked because they don't have protections in place for the workers. You see the corporations just taking advantage of the workers, taking money out of their paychecks. You have inferior products. You have a very depressed workforce. I mean, take a look at Georgia, for instance. Take a look at Mississippi. Take a look at Alabama, Louisiana. You know, I don't understand why these Republican legislators in Harrisburg would want to take those economies and bring them up to Pennsylvania. And one guy, even with a straight face, said, well, you have to understand that the cost of living down there is a lot less than it is up here. So basically, you're saying, okay, let the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. This is just a horrible argument to make. I don't understand why we would possibly embrace those failed policies and want to take a skilled workforce like we have in Pennsylvania, a strong workforce, and turn it into an Alabama or a Mississippi or a Louisiana. It's just awful.
Or a Utah for that matter.
That's right.
You know,
that's
I look right, at Utah right. When they had repealed their prevailing wage, basically their entire skilled trade went away. And
that's
you
right.
Ended up with transient labor coming through from who knows where, doing what kind of work, and then being gone. That's not what I want in my community. I want skilled craftspeople who, you know what, their kids are going to sit next to my kids in that classroom that they built. That's how you get buy-in, in my view.
That's exactly right.
And the wages that they earn reverberate through the economy. That's the important thing. So we pay these people a reasonable, decent living, and they're able to support local business. And I go back to when Lear was open in Carlisle, and a small business person said that, evidently, Lear had asked for an $8 an hour pay cut, and the guy said, "Well, those guys make too much money." And I said, "You know whose money that they were making? Yours.
That's exactly
because that's
right.
The money they used to spend in your store that they're not going to anymore. And guess where he's at today? He's as unemployed as they are.
Yep, get that. You know, people have to understand that these dollars are recycled in communities, and that's what makes them strong. That's what makes them vibrant. That's what makes them good places where people want to live, where they want to stay, where they want to raise families." But we don't, I mean, the corporates don't see it that way. It's just more about them putting more in their pockets and forgetting about the workers. It's absolutely wrong, and we need to keep drumming up that message and actually show a little outrage, Rick. I mean, we really need to show that we're just not going to take it anymore, that we have to stand up for ourselves, for our core beliefs, and keep hammering away at them, you know, harder than we have been before.
Yeah, and boots in the streets. Last line of questioning I've got for you. You know, I look at this, and I've said in a couple of the meetings that they've had on pensions and a couple of meetings they've had on privatization, and it's clear to me that the radicals who now inhabit the Republican parties truly believe that government should be the leader in the race to the bottom. And I guess the question then begs to be answered. Should government be the one leading us to the bottom of the barrel, or should government be the one who says, you know what, our investment in our communities and in our state and in our country, it's going to raise people's conditions, going to make people better off, not worse off? So I guess that's the question.
And the answer to that is, Rick, that the government should take a role of championing the cause for the people. I get so angry when I see squishy legislators, squishy members of an administration, whether that be Democratic or Republican, not standing up for the workers and apologizing for doing what they do. Republicans want to starve government. They want to make you afraid of it. And a lot of people have bought into that message that government is bad, when government should be taking a responsible role of lifting everybody's spirits up, everybody's lot in life up, and getting back to the core values that made us great in the first place. I mean, all you have to do is take a good look at what the New Deal did. Take a look at what was done in the 50s when Eisenhower converted the old roads and streets into a major interstate program. and look at some of the successes that can be mirrored today. And when we talk about that infrastructure system or the interstate system, we talk about infrastructure. Putting people back to work on these public projects makes sense for everyone. And government should be taking a lead role and being the cheerleaders for it instead of falling back and saying, oh, no, we're going to sit back because nobody likes government. They don't even like the word government anymore. So they're buying. I mean, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy of negativity.
Yep.
And it's got to stop because the resources are within the government. They're our resources because we pay those taxes that go into the system. And I'm just so sick and tired of listening to apologists. We need more reasonable voices out there. We need cheerleaders.
We need
for
visionaries.
Investments.
We need absolute people with vision. We need visionaries who are going to move our commonwealth and our country forward instead of being marred in this nonsensical assaults on workers. And it's just, you know, every one of these debt fights, the sequestration, all the fiscal mirage, all of this stuff, as you've pointed out, look, it's all to tear and bastardize government.
That's right.
That simple.
That's right.
Abe, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
You are more than welcome. Thank you.
Our good friend Abe Amoros from Liuna. Quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.
America for the better.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Any remake of the 1950s movie The Bad Seed should cast Monsanto in the title role. This biotech behemoth has a monopolistic grip on the creation and sale of frankenseeds, the seeds of corn, cotton, soybeans, and other crops that have had genetically modified organisms spliced into their natural DNA structure by corporate lab techs. Why insert risky, inadequately tested GMOs into our food supply? To produce crops that can survive heavier doses of toxic pesticides, specifically pesticides marketed by Monsanto. The corporation gets more profit, we get more pesticides and new man-made health risks. That's enough to make a truly horrific movie about the bad seed, but Monsanto has added to the horror by almost sadistically applying another level of its monopoly power. Having patented the GMO technology, the corporation asserts that when the plants grow in a farmer's field and subsequently produce their own seeds, those second-generation seeds do not belong to the farmer, but are Monsanto's private property. Thus, the seed-saving ethic that has sustained agriculture all around the world for centuries has been decreed illegal to benefit Monsanto. And the profiteering giant prowls the country to find and sue any of its own customers who dare practice the sensible art of seed-saving. The bully has 75 staffers and a $10 million a year budget dedicated to monitoring, investigating, prosecuting, and intimidating small farmers, even if some second-generation GMO seeds cropped up in their fields inadvertently. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is a case of one deep-pocket corporation perverting patent law in order to monopolize the sale of seeds, gouge thousands of farmers, and endanger both human health and the environment. To fight the ongoing horror of this bad seed, go to organicconsumers.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Texas is a right-to-work state. Texas is a great state. We could be the Texas of the Northeast.
They're selling make-believe, and we don't buy that deal. 'Cause in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down. While
could be the Texas of the Northeast. You know what Texas is doing? They're building roads. Lots of them. And fixing their bridges as well. I look at this, though, and, you know, in talking with Abe, it brings up a number of thoughts. You know, this whole prevailing wage thing, which is really, I've talked to some of these people who tell me that they're against it. And once you get past the bullet point of, I'm against that, because that's what fits on a bumper sticker, there's no real depth there. They say, well, you know, it's cheaper. I go, is it really? Do you have the data on that? Because here in Pennsylvania, when we decided to do away with it and do away with some of the bidding process, what did we find out? Well, we found out that the costs were actually higher. Go back to the Ridge years. You'll find it. When Ohio did away with prevailing wage on schools, what they found, schools actually cost more. Because there's something to having people who actually know what they're doing the job. There's something to having an industry of skilled local craftsmen. And understand, that's what these people are. And I know over the last 30 years, it's been drilled into us that, well, you know, you need to go to college. You need to sit in an office. You need to shuffle papers. You need to wear a white tie and a white shirt and a tie. You know what? Some people are never going to do that. Some people actually want to get their hands dirty and they want to create things and they want to work with their hands. And that should be respected as well. And I think back to my grandfather, and I find myself, and my wife said to me today at breakfast, you know, for as much as you didn't get along, you sure do quote him a lot and find a lot of wisdom in what he had to say. And the truth of the matter is it was his generation, because they were the street smart generation. They were the ones who really got screwed. They're the ones who got hit by the Depression. They're the ones who fought World War II. And they're the ones who said, you know, enough is enough. We're going to stand up and we're going to say no more. And we're going to make it that the next generation doesn't have to do what we had to do. And that our kids and our grandkids and our great-grandkids, that they're going to have the future that we didn't. And I think back to him quite often because, you know, he never had a negative thing to say about somebody who worked for a living. Always thought, you know, wow, that guy does fantastic work. That's a skilled craftsperson. That's a skilled tradesman. It didn't matter what it was. Respect for the job. It's only been, you know, the last, in my view, really the last 10 years especially, where you've seen people who work in a store, you see people who work, you know, as a cashier or as a mechanic or as a home builder, you know, as a laborer, not the guy who stands there with the tie and the hard hat and points around. But the people actually did the work. There was deep respect for that kind of work. And I remember when Obama took office in 2009, I said, you know what? I want to see that reward for that work. For that work, that creation, I want to see that rewarded. And I want to see the passage of the Employee Free Choice Act, and much stronger, to give workers the ability to collectively bargain and say, you know what? What our hands create, what the ache of our back and the sweat of our brow produces, we should share it. And you've seen a political party, and really, you know, as Abe pointed out, some who are supposed to be on the side of workers not knowing what workers go through. Because for too long, what we've allowed to happen. And this is why I tell, you know, somebody asked me the other day, politically, what am I? And I said, you know, I'm not big on labels so much. If I had to say, I would be a green conservative liberal libertarian. Because I think there's good ideas all around. And I think you take ideologically the ones that are right. You do what's in the best interest of the nation and of workers. And as my uncle pointed out to me, he said, you know, we could give you workers all the money you want, and we would end up with it. And I said, you know, there's some truth to that. And if that were the case, why don't we do that? Instead of just giving it to you, because we're irresponsible. Why don't we try what you've just said? And there was no will to go that route. Because in the end, what it comes down to is sandbox rules. I don't want to share. That's what the top is telling us. That's what the wealth is telling us. And they're going to pay the bullies, and they're going to pay the loud mouths, and they're going to buy up the media, and they're going to do the things that they can do to constantly stay in our ear to divide us. And they're winning. That's the reality. When Warren Buffett says, it's class war and my class is winning, he's right. He's absolutely right. And you look at the... Last week we had talked about Scott Walker's State of the State address, where he said he was going to give some middle class tax cuts. He said our middle class tax cut is a down payment on my future goal of reducing the tax burden in our state every year I'm in office. He said I want to cut taxes over and over and over again until we are leading the country in economic recovery. Yet study after study has shown that, you know, all of these repetitive tax cuts have not led to economic boom. What they've led to is massive redistribution of wealth. And when the folks at the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy did the analysis of his plan, what they found out, and surprise of all surprise, well, the very wealthy got the vast majority. In fact, the top fifth of earners took 54% of that tax cut. The second fifth, 26%. The middle fifth, 14%. And, well, you folks at the bottom, not so much. The lowest fifth got 1%. So in actual dollar terms, if you find yourself in that lowest 20%, you got $2. But if you found yourself in the top 1%, you're looking at about $285. Think about that. If I were doing things, that would be the other way around. And you go, but that's redistribution of wealth. Yeah. I go back to what my uncle said. You know, if we gave money to the people at the bottom, it would just go back to the wealthy anyway. So instead of saying Scott Walker's tax cut, that we're just going to give it to you, why not work for it? Well, because that's too much work. If you really wanted to spur the economy, wouldn't you give the $285 to the person in the lower end of the economic scale? Because guess what? They're going to spend it. And they're going to spend it on services conceivably provided by the job creators in the 1% if you buy that they're the job creators, which I don't. And as you go up in wealth, your tax breaks should not go up with you. But I guess that's just a difference of opinion, because we've got a party in this country and a lot of Democrats along with them who think that, wow, you know, if we give money to the pay homage to the chair, if we worship the billionaire, if we do our worship and pay our homage and here's our money, give our sacrifice, that it will trickle down. It hasn't, and it won't. I'm going to take a quick break, right back. Stick around.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go.
Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
Many scientists have been projecting a global sea level rise of up to half a meter by the year 2100.
But sea level may be rising faster than that, according to geologist Bill Hay at the University of Colorado. His work suggests that Earth's seas are rising at the maximum rate projected by scientists, or faster.
Hay said the existing models for sea level rise don't take into account feedback mechanisms. For example, Arctic sea ice is melting, but that ice is already floating in the ocean, so that doesn't, by itself, raise sea level. But a darker surface absorbs more sunlight. The more open water there is, the more heat is trapped in Arctic waters, and the warmer things can get. That warmth causes ice from nearby landmasses, including Greenland and Canada, to melt into the sea.
Or consider groundwater. Hay said it's being used, he actually used the word mined, faster than it would be otherwise to help mitigate droughts brought on by warming temperatures. That groundwater, too, ultimately goes into the oceans.
Hay said Earth's climate seems to have certain stable states. Between those states, things are unstable and can change quickly. We appear to be in a less stable state now. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for the words sea level rise. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
In the end, Wall Street with Obama, Duncan, Bloomberg, Walcott, and Goldstein as its agents, they want to turn public education into private profitable businesses. They hope to impose factory regime of managerial control over educators' working conditions and our students, our children's learning conditions.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. This weekend, the Keystone Progress Pennsylvania Progressive Summit going to take place on Friday, beginning at 4 o'clock at the Harrisburg Hilton, and all day Saturday there at the Hilton as well. On Friday, David Cobb, national spokesperson for Move to Amend, will be there to talk about their constitutional amendment, pushing to say, you know what? People, not corporations. Sorry, no corporate personhood for us. Also, Raul Garhalva, congressman from Arizona, will be there with a word from the Progressive Caucus in Congress. You're going to see all of the Pennsylvania row officers. Kathleen Kane, the attorney general, will be there. Eugene DePasquale, Rob McCord also will speak at their lunch, and you'll have the opportunity to meet and greet with them. It'll be an excellent opportunity. And I'm all in favor of these things. I think the more opportunity you have to be around like-minded people, to share ideas, bounce thoughts off each other, and do that organizing, do that networking that needs to happen for us to go forward, to begin to do, look, what the right has done masterfully. It's the wrong message they're pushing, but they are hammering on it, and greed is good. More for us, less for you. That's basically their message. Screw you. Hooray for us. Also on Saturday night, we plan on being out at the Cornerstone Coffee House, 2133 Market Street there in Camp Hill, as 100,000 Poets and Musicians for Change hold their protest music sing-along. It's going to start at 7:30 to 10. That'll be Saturday. We're going to be there. Any questions, any thoughts on the events, you want more information, you can always email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I look at this whole push by our governor, all of this austerity, all of this radical change. And today, the folks at Keystone Research Center, they held an event and released their first in a series of pension primers papers. They're talking about what's this going to do, what's it done in other states. And what they've come up with is, look, the Corbett plan, as we've been saying, you don't need you know, wonky research to tell you what you already know. It's gonna cost more for the state. It's gonna cost more for school districts, and it's gonna cost more for you, me, and every other taxpayer in this Commonwealth, because we've screwed the system up. We've allowed the ideologues to destroy the system, and now it needs to be fixed, and it needs to be done in the right way. And yeah, I agree. There are some things that have to be changed. They did that. Let's let the changes, the Act 120 changes, let's see if this, let's let that make its toll. Let's do that. And look, I'm not thrilled with that. I think it's, for the people who are going to be hired in the next year, I think it's a screw job. But it is the best of the alternatives. But what the governor wants to do, he wants in 2015 to start all new employees to get into these defined contribution plans. Your basic 401k that they're probably going to underfund. What's this going to mean? Well, it's going to mean a couple of things. One, you still have the liability of all of the folks in the defined benefit plan. We owe that. And that's going to grow larger because a couple of things are going to happen. One, all of the new people that are coming in are no longer contributing to that. So now you've got a system that is going to have to figure out how to get all of the unfunded liability packed into a shorter period of time because you don't have the next generation to help fund it, to help try and recover from the two recessions. But also, as Eddie DePaschinski pointed out earlier, the decade of no funding by the state, because, hey, it's fully funded. Why do we want to do that? What do we care about that for? And, of course, some of the really bad changes that politicians made. Now, there are some areas that, you know, I look at Alaska, who had done the same thing. They closed their teachers' defined benefit plan in 2005. And guess what? Their employer contributions have risen mightily. Michigan, they began doing it back in, I think it was 1997, their unfunded liabilities through the roof. This doesn't take a genius to figure out. I like Dr. Steven Herzenberg, think he's a bright guy, he's a brilliant guy. MIT, a PhD from MIT, but you don't need to be a PhD from MIT to understand that this is a ripoff. You don't need that to figure out that we're going to get screwed in this, and guess who else gets screwed? Besides you and me and all the taxpayers, the people who it's supposed to benefit. So when I talk to these teachers who say, you know what, if this happens, I'm taking my money and I'm going. You know what that does to the system? Think this through. When you're sending the message that we're going to be making radical changes to your pension, you're talking about people who have options to go elsewhere. And they're going to say, you know what, I've got my time in. We're leaving. We're taking the money and we're running. And we're going to suck it all out of the fund that's already depleted because of two recessions and underfunding, and they're going to go. What's that going to do to the fund? That's right. It's going to make it more unfunded. It's going to make the situation worse, not better. And nobody's really asked the governor this because nobody's really allowed to ask questions, I guess. But I did sit in on the House's hearings, and the experts that the corporatists brought in, the people who are ideologically in favor of defined contributions, they all said this as well. So this isn't radical leftist. This is reality. This is nonpartisan. The facts is the facts, folks. It is what it is. But I found it interesting that one of the experts that they brought in from one of the big Washington right-wing think tanks said it's the right thing to do. It's going to cost us a lot more, but ideologically, it's the right thing to do. And I found that very telling because what that told me is ideology over reality, blind faith, belief over fact. And no rational thought about what's going to happen to you and me and the people who do the jobs for us on the state level, the teachers, the cops, the firefighters. And, you know, I go back to that number, nearly $40 billion lost every year because of loop, out of state, not a, out of nation loopholes. Cost the states $40 billion a year. That's enough to pay every firefighter, all the firefighting costs throughout the entire nation. We're allowing that to go. And what bothers me is, you know, I keep hearing people say, well, you know, you're talking about redistribution of wealth. Well, what the hell do you think that is? I mean, really, what do you think that is? I mean, it's an absolute ripoff. And I look on the education front. Ideologically, we are starving public education of funding for one reason, to privatize it. This has been the right-wing fantasy for years. This has been that erotic fantasy that they've had for generations, privatizing education so that they can control it. You know, in a charter school where teachers don't have any rights, what type of academic freedom do you think you're going to have? You're going to have people who are going to teach to the market-tested, corporate-approved grill and drill test. And, you know, the whole voucher thing, thought up years ago by Uncle Milty, the Chicago school economist who brought us all of the neoliberalism and all of the free trade nonsense that has destroyed this nation. It's infuriating. But he said, you know, because he knew vouchers were the way to get the privatization, because, you know, none of us would go, yeah, let's privatize education. We all know it's a ripoff. We all know it's a screw job. But you start throwing in, you should have the choice. It's a marketplace. You can have choice. It's school choice week. And then you start to go, oh, yeah, well, now do you see? Uncle Milty said vouchers are not an end in themselves. He said there are means to make a transition from government to a free market system. In his piece, Capitalism and Freedom, he wrote, when a crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas lying around. The ideas lying around. And you've got these right-wing think tanks funded by these billionaires who keep spewing stuff. As Joe Biden would say, malarkey. But they keep spewing this stuff out there constantly. Prevailing wage cost us 30%. We could have saved, you know, $1 million on that building project if we were just using prison labor. How many of you would be for that? How many people, I wonder how many folks would be in favor of having prison labor build the school that their kids go to? Because there's part of me goes, this is where we're heading. I mean, it's that incremental move down the road to the good old days of the 1880s and 1890s. And I'm glad Eddie DePashinsky brought up his father being a mine worker. Glad he brought that up. And because, you know, that's a story that I tell people that, no, we didn't do that. We were much better than that. We're a civilized society. And that was within the last 100 years that happened. You go back and you listen, you read some of the history of our mining. Of our mining history. And I'll never forget that as long as I live. Taking that kid that I was a big brother to that mine, and him seeing that, and I mean, this is part of the history of our nation that is nowhere allowed near public education or any education, and there is a systematic dismantling of all labor education and labor history in this country, a destruction of our past, and a rewriting of that past. Every time I turn on the History Channel, I say, oh, the people who made America great, there's Andrew Carnegie and Frick, and there's the Morgans and the Rockefellers and the Mellons, and these aren't the people who made America great. You're the people who made America great. The people who got up every day and worked their behinds off, who raised their families, who raised their kids to be that next generation of hardworking, proud Americans. Something seriously wrong with the message, don't you think? Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
There are moments for the homeless. for the poor. Who cares about the deficit? We want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get The Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Buy the stuff you love with retailers' credit cards. Ditch their high interest rates with the help of PSECU. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details.
Whatever new stuff you bought last year with retailers' high-interest credit cards, let PSECU help you get a fresh new start. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Keep reiterating that the students aren't going to take it. Like, we're not going to take it. Like, not in the literal sense, not in the literal sense. We need to have this solidarity.
Well, I guess I can no longer say that the bankers are not going to jail. The FBI in the Sacramento area has issued a release. That's right. Their release says U.S. District Judge William B. Shubb sentenced Joel Blanford, 44, of San Ramon, California, to 30 months in prison, to be followed by 3 years of supervised release for mortgage fraud, for their mortgage fraud scheme. U.S. Attorney Benjamin B. Wagner announced on September 19, 2002, following a 7-day trial, a jury found Blanford guilty of 6 counts of mail fraud. They said that this case was the product of an investigation by the FBI and the IRS Criminal Investigation Unit. Assistant U.S. Attorneys Paul Hemseth and Michael Beckworth prosecuted the case. According to the evidence presented at trial, from approximately April of 2003 through October of 2005, Mr. Blanford, while working as a senior sales representative for the Long Beach Mortgage
Company, a wholesale subprime lender and former subsidiary of Washington Mutual Incorporated, participated in a scheme to defraud his employer. Blandford earned compensation based on the volume of loans processed by the Long Beach Mortgage Company. Evidence established that he paid a loan coordinator to cash and checks to falsify documents, provide false verification of borrower's employment or professional licensing status, and turned a blind eye to fraudulent representation contained in loan applications. Basically, systematic, all the way up and down the chain, as Wagner, U.S. Attorney Wagner said, this investigation exposed a sophisticated chain of fraud that started at the home buyer level and extended all the way to banking insiders. He said, this is a lesson that those earning million-dollar paychecks are not exempt from significant criminal penalties. Really, 30 months in jail, 3 years probation, significant? I don't know. Taking millions, defrauding thousands of people. I'm sorry. This is not what I'm talking about. This is not the kind of sentencing I believe we should be having. Some little savings, some little company that shuffled through mortgages. That's the big fish we're frying. No. Sorry. Just not working. Over the past 3 years, they claim the Justice Department has filed nearly 10,000 financial fraud cases against nearly 15,000 defendants, including more than 2,900 mortgage fraud defendants. And who'd they go after? They went after guys like this. A sales representative. But he was a senior sales rep. I understand that. The guy who ran the place, scot-free. And this is what blows my mind. I mean, we go after the little fish, and the little fish, they're the ones who pay the piper. And I think about, you think of all the bankers that just robbed us blind. And I saw a story of a guy, the story of that woman eating Oreos. Perfect example. That woman's going to do serious jail time because it was a second offense. She got caught for theft a couple years ago, I understand. Caught eating Oreos. She's going to do serious time because we've got to make sure that those people understand property rights and they understand theft is a crime and they need to be punished. But the people who crashed our economy, no, not so much. Because when you fail at that level, we give you a bonus. When you fail at the corner office, we give you a nice, look at Jack Lew. Here, we know you screwed up, but here's $1 million. And some people look at it as $1 million to leave. I look at it as kind of like bribery. Congratulations, you got a job in the government. You're going to be the guy overseeing us. Yes. We're paying a little insurance money. Good insurance. Thinking about insurance, Elizabeth Warren was grilling Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke during a committee hearing today at the Senate Banking Committee. And she said, quote, I understand we're all trying to get to the end of too big to fail. She said, but my question, Mr. Chairman, is until we do, should those biggest financial institutions be repaying the American taxpayer that $83 billion subsidy that they're getting? Because she's saying, look, these too big to fail banks, and it was a report done by Bloomberg News that these big banks are getting essentially a subsidy about $83 billion because, people who invest in them and people who do banking, they believe that, hey, these big banks are going to get saved by the government if they get into trouble. So we're going to go there. So she asked, should we be doing something to break these up? She said these big financial institutions are getting cheaper borrowing at the tune of $83 billion in a single year because people believe government would step in to bail them out. She said, and I'm just saying, if they're getting it, why shouldn't they be paying for it? And he says, I think we should get rid of it. And as pointed out in this piece, Bloomberg found the biggest banks wouldn't even be profitable without the expectation that they would be bailed out. What they found is the banks occupying the commanding heights of the U.S. financial industry, with almost $9 trillion in assets, more than half the size of the U.S. economy, would just about break even in the absence of corporate welfare. In large part, Bloomberg writes, the profits they report are essentially transfers from taxpayers to shareholders. Too big to fail has gotten to be bigger than too big to fail. And had we done what I had advocated for back in 2008, when I thought it was possible, had we the political will, you break up these behemoths and you make them, because this is where I agree with the right wing with this idea of competition. Because each is going to keep, hopefully, each other honest. But, again, the right, they don't believe in real competition. The only competition they believe in is when they can pit one member of the working class against another. When they can pit the rurals against the urbans. When they can pit the whites against the blacks, the minorities against each other. Men against women. That's what their master's at. And I look at this and I go, you know, there's got to be a way to fix this. And to me, it's about education. It's about saying enough already. You look at this 2012. 2012 was the most profitable year since the financial crisis for the big bankers, according to the Financial Deposit Insurance Corporation. $141 billion. And you go, well, where's this coming from? According to Ms. Warren, big part of it's coming from you and me. The screw job is happening, and yet they keep throwing it out to us, don't they? You could cut 3 cents from a dollar, couldn't you? The sequester might be, it's going to be a good thing, because we could cut that waste. Yet we find out it ain't there. It's been cut a long, long time ago. And the waste that they see is programs that benefit you and me and the folks who need a helping hand. The investment in our future, the investment in our kids, in our infrastructure, in our nation, that's the waste. That's the fraud, and that's the abuse in their mind. Sad, sad stuff. I'm going to take a quick break, right back with hour three of the program. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Rick Smith.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Texas Governor Rick Perry recently got an earful of protest from people outraged that Perry is refusing to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Here's some of what happened as the Texas Organizing Project disrupted a fundraiser at the Republican Capitol Hill Club.
Actually, those people are from Alabama.
Losing money because
because you are blocking people's access to affordable health care. It's a dumb move, Governor Barry. It's just dumb.
7 million people in Texas have no health insurance. The Texas Organizing Project says that Perry's refusing to expand Medicaid means Texas will pass up $78 billion in federal funds. That will leave 2 million Texans uninsured who otherwise would be covered under Medicaid. Filipino oil rig workers are touring the country to expose inhumane working conditions. Jesse Russell reports.
A Louisiana-based company is facing a class action lawsuit due to alleged poor working conditions for Filipino workers. The workers say recruiters for Grand Isle Shipyards offered wages of between $16 and $24 per hour, as well as room and board, if those workers would go to the United States. Instead, the workers say in the lawsuit that the actual pay started at $5.50 per hour, and they were provided with poor living quarters, and had funds taken out of their paychecks to cover the cost of living. If workers expressed discontent with their situation, they said, the company would threaten to have them deported. The number of Filipino workers now in the lawsuit is nearly 100. Grand Isle Shipyard made headlines last November when an explosion on a Black Elk Energy platform killed 3 Filipino workers. The workers were subcontracted by Grand Isle. The Filipino workers are currently on a tour of the United States in an effort to bring attention to their situation. This past weekend, they were visiting Gulf states, where they spoke about the conditions they allegedly experienced working for the company.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Volkswagen just invested in Tennessee, in a right-to-work state, at a low cost, with less health care. Why should we prop others up when other companies can compete in this marketplace? It's time to let these people learn the lesson the hard way.
Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. And, you know, Zach Womp's right, man. Came to Tennessee, why? Less wages, lower benefits, lower for you. And that's been the mantra across the country. You know, we went to Wisconsin. We saw the assaults on workers' rights in Wisconsin and Michigan and Indiana and Ohio. And they're underway right now in Missouri, heading this way. As we speak, the Missouri legislature is pushing this paycheck deception law. Hey, we got the same stuff right here. And the reason we went to Michigan and we went to Wisconsin, we went to Ohio, to tell you, you know what? It's coming here, which is why I've asked Sean Nicholson, Executive Director of Progress Missouri, to come talk to us about what's going on in Missouri, because it's coming here, folks. Sean, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
So what's the status right now with this paycheck deception law that's being rammed through?
So paycheck deception has left the initial Senate committee. There was a few hours of debate on it last night on the Senate floor, and it looks like it's on hold for the moment, but it's not clear if that's because the Republicans who are pushing this don't have the votes or just because today's not the day. So it's definitely, you know, we're still at red alert right now.
Walk us through exactly what this piece of legislation would do to workers in Missouri.
So the paycheck deception legislation that we have is a lot like the attacks that, you know, we're seeing all around the country. This particular piece of legislation is really targeted at public workers. At AFSCME, at SEIU, at CWA, other, you know, folks that plow our streets and take care of our veterans, and you know, that those are the folks that they're going after. It's very much a divide and conquer strategy, like we saw in Wisconsin and elsewhere. So this is the first step of what the other side hopes is the first step of a few bad things.
Right. You know, the reason we went to Wisconsin, you know, 2 years ago, right now, is because I said, look, the playbook's been passed out. All these plays are coming this way. At the time, we were talking about ALEC before most people knew who it was. Is this an ALEC piece of legislation?
I think it would be fair to say that this is ALEC-inspired, but it's not a direct word-for-word match. That said, we've got 7 or 8 right-to-work bills that are moving through the House and Senate, and those are all carbon copies of the ALEC model. So the folks who are pushing this are members of ALEC, connected to ALEC, you know, all the signs are there, but But the specific paycheck bill that's moving in the Missouri Senate right now is not a direct match as far as what we know.
You know, I've been talking about Uncle Milton Friedman, who a lot of what's going on was the brainchild of the Chicago School economist, people like Freeman, who said, you know, when a crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depends on the ideas lying around. And, you know, you look at a lot of the crisis that came in 2008, Republicans and the ALEC folks and all of the ideas they had been talking about to each other for years now seem to, hey, this is our time to take advantage of this crisis and never let a good crisis go to waste. And these are the ideas that they've been talking about for years. Now they're really ramming them through.
Absolutely. And I think the concern on this end here in Missouri is that the other side, the CEOs, their politicians, they're emboldened and they're focused on just a few states now, right? So they were successful in Michigan, successful in Wisconsin, and those initial attacks. And so, you know, they've turned their sights on us. We had a number of national folks in our Capitol a couple weeks ago for some of these so-called right to work hearings. We actually were able to send a volunteer to sit in on a secretive meeting with folks from Michigan, from California, from D.C. who are coming in to strategize and talk about, you know, how some of these politicians need to sell this, some updated messaging. There were threats about if you don't do this, you know, your fundraising is going to dry up. So it's definitely a full court press that we're up against here.
Yeah, you know, how much outside money is pouring into this? Because I had seen some of those threats. I had seen them saying that they're gonna run people against them in primaries, and they would pull their funding and make sure that the other people were heavily funded. I mean, really, you go at some level, is that not almost criminal?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know about the criminal stuff. I mean, certainly being close to the Capitol, there's a whole lot of stuff that goes on that's disgusting and gross and unethical, but doesn't quite, you know, rise to against the law. And as far as how much money is coming, it's just impossible to know. You know, as all this money moves through 501c4s and ALEC, you know, is a fraudulent 501c3. I mean, all that serves to obscure the amount and the source of the original funders. So it's hard to know how much, but it's a lot, and it has the attention of the leaders in both the House and Senate here in Missouri.
Because the reason I think it's important that we talk to you in Missouri is because it's coming this way. I mean, all the same legislation is lying around here, if you will, to use the Milton Friedman frame. It's all lying around here. It's all ready to go.
Yeah, and as we've seen, you know, state after state, they move quickly when they decide to move, right? So, I mean, it's not something that we're going to be allowed, you know, months to ramp up, and it's not going to plot along. I mean, when they strike, it's going to be quick.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of this, what kind of response are you getting from the labor community? I mean, at some point, the mobilization takes place. You get people in the streets. I know you're not to the extent that we saw in Wisconsin, but at some point, don't we have to be doing more of that?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's certainly a lot of that organizing and that mobilization that's happening and getting ready to happen. One of the great things about Missouri is that there has been bipartisan opposition to these so-called right-to-work bills. There's been bipartisan opposition to paycheck deception that has kept this away for several years. We are still optimistic that bipartisan opposition will hold, and so it's a delicate dance of making sure that, you know, the support is shown and the public power and the worker power is shown without doing something to, you know, trigger an unfortunate consequence. So, you know, we're getting ready and doing what we can, and folks are really, you know, coming together to put together a response plan.
Yeah, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Sean Nicholson, Executive Director of Progress Missouri, progressmissouri.org, the website. We've got a link at therickSmithShow.com. You know, what is it? And this is one of the questions that I've often pondered. You know, what is it about the corporatist? I don't even know if it's really Republicans so much as the corporate wing of the Republican Party who really despises working people. And that's what I see this as, taking their rights away, pushing them down. I mean, these are the people who rush into burning buildings. These are the people who teach our kids. These are our vital people in our states, in our country. And these attacks, constant barrage of attacks, I struggle with it.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you're right to point out that it's not a purely partisan deal. I mean, as I mentioned, there are Republicans and Democrats who have fought this off together here in the past. But as far as those Republicans who are pushing this, there is a real hostility towards organized labor and to working folks that it's hard to understand. The nonsense that has come out in the legislative process and in public forums in support of all these bills is just, it's been hard to quantify and hard to keep track of all the lies. A lot of these folks, I think, you know, there's some ideology there. Others are just chasing dollars, I think. They are thinking about, you know, their future campaigns and who's going to fund their next piece. And they're not really worried about the consequences so much as, and they're not worried about who's going to get hurt. They're just worried about their own next political adventure.
And that's really the problem with all of this, in my opinion. It's all about getting to the next election, which causes most of our problems. I look at our pension situation here, and for years, you know, you had people running out, well, we cut taxes. Yeah, but you didn't pay your bills. And had you not cut taxes, we'd have paid those bills. We wouldn't be in the mess we were in because we've got this narrow tunnel vision of, I just got to make it to the next election.
Sure, and we see that in Washington. We see that in Jeff City. I'm sure you see that in Harrisburg, right, where the dynamics are all messed up, where they're not so much even worried about the next election, but they're worried about the next primary election, you know, with a very small set of the electorate who have a very narrow set of interests. So they're not even representing their full constituency right now.
And I go back to this paycheck deception law that they're trying to push through. And again, it's more of that divide and conquer. And I always go back to Jay Gould, the railroad magnate from the 1880s, 1890s, who said I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. This is that divide and conquer. This is pitting worker against worker, public sector, private sector. I don't, union, non-union, white collar, blue collar. I don't care. It's all about division and keeping us at each other's throats.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about, you know, skewing the power even further towards the 1%. Absolutely.
So what beyond the lobbying, beyond the getting to the Capitol, what are folks doing there to push back? What should we be telling people here to prepare for? How do we push back? What are you doing well? What's working well for you guys?
So I think that there's a lot of constituent and citizen contact going in and just telling their legislators, their representatives, and their senators that there are real problems facing the state, and this is a made-up one, and that there are real things that they can be working on to move things forward. That's been effective. I mean, I think that legislators in their hearts of hearts know that that's a true thing. So there's been lots of constituent contact. There's meetings in districts with the legislatures. There's a lot of, you know, going door-to-door, talking to neighbors, talking to church congregants about what's happening. So I think it's a lot of just a really traditional, you know, feet on the ground kind of deal.
Yeah, last line of questioning I've got for you. You know, instead of, in my view, instead of going after all of this ideological nonsense, we should be creating jobs, we should be getting people back to work. And I look at all of this wasted time that we could be spending more constructively. I mean, you look at what's going on in D.C. with this whole made-up crisis over sequestration. There is so much we should be doing, but we're wasting so much time on this stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's part of what, you know, the 1% of their politicians want, progressives and, you know, the most folks to be worried about, right? The more days and the more weeks and months that we, you know, just spend fighting off these attacks, those are days that we can be organizing and moving forward, productive policy.
Yeah, excellent point. The more time we spend fighting the shiny thing, the more they're robbing us blind. Sad stuff.
Don't disagree.
Sean, I appreciate the time. It was great talking with you. Sean Nicholson, Executive Director of Progress Missouri, progressmissouri.org. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Fellow working class heroes, I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go.
Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Any remake of the 1950s movie The Bad Seed should cast Monsanto in the title role. This biotech behemoth has a monopolistic grip on the creation and sale of frankenseeds, the seeds of corn, cotton, soybeans, and other crops that have had genetically modified organisms spliced into their natural DNA structure by corporate lab techs. Why insert risky, inadequately tested GMOs into our food supply? To produce crops that can survive heavier doses of toxic pesticides, specifically pesticides marketed by Monsanto. The corporation gets more profit, we get more pesticides and new man-made health risks. That's enough to make a truly horrific movie about the bad seed, but Monsanto has added to the horror by almost sadistically applying another level of its monopoly power. Having patented the GMO technology, the corporation asserts that when the plants grow in a farmer's field and subsequently produce their own seeds, those second-generation seeds do not belong to the farmer, but are Monsanto's private property. Thus, the seed-saving ethic that has sustained agriculture all around the world for centuries has been decreed illegal to benefit Monsanto. And the profiteering giant prowls the country to find and sue any of its own customers who dare practice the sensible art of seed-saving. The bully has 75 staffers and a $10 million a year budget dedicated to monitoring, investigating, prosecuting, and intimidating small farmers, even if some second-generation GMO seeds cropped up in their fields inadvertently. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is a case of one deep-pocket corporation perverting patent law in order to monopolize the sale of seeds, gouge thousands of farmers, and endanger both human health and the environment. To fight the ongoing horror of this bad seed, go to organicconsumers.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
An 83-page how-to book, School Closure Guide, Closing Schools as a Means for Addressing Budgetary Challenges, put out by the good folks at the Broad Foundation. Broad Foundation, according to their website, their mission, transforming K-12 urban public education through better governance, management, labor relations, and competition. Because you know what? Those urbans, they need competition. And the labor relations part, do what we say. Yeah, that's better governance. See? The billionaires hath spoken. And you look at the money that they're spending transforming education. And I love that. It's such nice language. Beautiful. It's like they care. Oh, they do. They're such wonderful philanthropists, aren't they? Oh, gee, they've always been so gracious and wonderful. Yet, it's about control. And I go back and I remember the report about the Koch brothers who had given, you know, all across the country, you've got these different institutes and you've got these different colleges who take money from the billionaires and give away certain things. And I remember the story about Florida State University, which is a big university. I mean, where $2 million is not life or death. But for $2 million, as reported, the Koch brothers had the ability to veto any professor hired in the economics department. And you go, think about the power that gives. Because you're never going to hear anything but the side that they want you to hear. Education to me is about a broad spectrum of ideas, especially when you get to higher education. I wanted an across-the-board perspective. Because that's how you become a well-rounded person. You understand both sides of the argument. And then you weigh based on your filters and your life experience where things fit, where we should be heading. And I ask, you know, based on what we've seen over the years, do you think privatizing and profitizing public education is a smart thing to do? Do you think putting corporate voices in our classrooms is a good thing to do? And I look at this story about the Donors Trust and Donor Capital Fund, who have been spending millions of dollars promoting this John Stossel, putting him in classroom, Stossel in the classroom. In fact, these two moneyed groups have spent over $400 million on 1,000 conservative groups since they were founded in 1999. And in fact, this donor trust, according to the article, in 2011 gave the Philadelphia-based Center for Independent Thought over $500,000 with the intention of distributing this Stossel in the classroom, quote unquote, teaching materials in that district. Now, the good folks at the Center for Independent Thought, their mission, according to their website, is to, you know, bring the ideas of liberty to freedom-loving people around the globe. And, of course, the best way to do that is with, you know, the mustache himself. Free Stossel in the classrooms. And you go, wow, that's great. We've got, think this through for a second. I mean, this is where we're going with this. You've got a governor who for the past 2 years has been starving public education. You've got a school district down in Philadelphia, the Chester Upland School District, who for 2 months didn't have any money to pay their teachers, because they'd given it away to the charters and the charter operators. So what you end up getting then is you get these charter operators who go, well, you know, we want to keep more money for ourselves, so instead of buying curriculum or hiring teachers, we can get Stossel in the classroom for free. Free DVDs, free videos, free discussion guides. The programs are all right there. And according to the people who distribute this garbage, there are more than 150,000 teachers in middle schools, high schools, and colleges around the country who are using this stuff. You want to talk about power? And it's not even all that much money. I mean, that's what's infuriating to me. And how did it all start? Well, again, it goes back to the Koch brothers when they started their Libertarian Review Foundation back in the 70s. And you look at all of these other, the handfuls of these really well-founded groups, people like Americans for Limited Government, the Libertarian Group, Cato, Club for Growth, one of my favorites, the Friedman Center for Educational Choice. But it's all of these handfuls of big corporate, these big modern-day robber barons who fund these handful. And you go back to what the quote I used for Friedman, because I think it's important. It's the ideas that are lying around. So you get used to them being around. So when the crisis hits, whether self-imposed or something outside of our control, like a Katrina, the ideas are already there, already honed, already put into nice, easy-to-distribute packages. And at a moment's notice, ready to spring. I mean, this is the free market, taking advantage of opportunity. And you go, well, that's what it's for. That's what the free market does. No. This is... a lot of it's self-imposed. And you look at the amounts of money, hundreds of millions of dollars, to do what? Well, to get in our kids' heads. And one of the things that I found interesting, and it's something that I've thought of doing because I think, again, I want people to think about where we've come from. I've often said that we need to have kids in eighth grade do research on where they would be 100 years ago. If they were born 100 years ago, what would their life be like? And I've often wanted to have an essay contest just to see what they came up with. Well, the right does this a lot. Because there are a lot of things like Stossel in the classroom. And there's a lot of money that goes into it. And they've been doing these essay contests. In fact, the Stossel in the Classroom essay contest had 225 cash prizes. 225. And one of last year's winners who won an all expense paid trip to New York and got to be sit there with Stossel with the mustache himself was a 13-year-old. Who looked at the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act of 2009 and set an example of a harmful government overreach. This is what we're changing. This is what we're teaching 13-year-old kids now, that fair pay for women is harmful. Harmful for the good. It's a government overreach. It's bad for the economy. Because, well, people just wouldn't hire women. They wouldn't hire minorities. And it would be bad. And I often wish that they would take a different angle. You know, if we all had contracts, like CEOs have, like Stossel has, then we wouldn't have those problems. Then we could demand fair wages and fair pay. For women, men, doesn't matter. But I find it really amazing the amount of money that goes into this. And so many people are willing to just let it go. You know, I'm increasingly disturbed by the corporate messages my kids get when they go to school. And look, you know, school districts are struggling. Self-imposed crisis. Budgets have been slashed. Tax-based slashed. Right now, where I, like, every day I drive past where Carlisle Tire and Wheel was. 93 years they were in that community. Right now they're tearing down the building. They're tearing down 93 years of history in that community. And why did that happen? That happened because, well, beggar thy neighbor economic development. So when that plant left, when those workers left, that tax base left, the school district struggled. And, well, what do you know? Stossel in the classroom. That's a way to not have to have study hall. We could present some information. It is the self-fulfilling prophecy, is it not? It is weakening government. It is starving the beast. It is making it so small that you really truly could drown it in the bathtub. And every one of these 1,000 cuts, every one of these hostage crises, every one of these situations where conservative leadership proves time and time again that they can't run government, it's another cut. And it's another push towards, hey, the private sector can do it so much better and so much neater, and you'll never have to think about it or worry about it again, but you will. You will pay for it through the nose. Amazing, amazing stuff. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with Luke Vargas, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around.
You know they're gonna push us around, Mr. Pep and Dig and Mr. Harlequin Hauling, cause I'm gonna leave it in the ground. Mr. Tap and Dig and Mr. Harlequin Hauling, Mr. Reagan can supervise the crew. And if they find it too hard, they got the National Guard to fix the bayonets and shovel like fools. It's gonna take a lot of long and 80 short days for this miner to cool on down. This Tap can dig it, Mr. Harley can haul it, cause I'm gonna leave it in the ground.
Buy the stuff you love with Retailer's Credit Cards. ditch their high interest rates with the help of PSECU. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. Whatever new stuff you bought last year with retailers' high-interest credit cards, let PSECU help you get a fresh new start. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Another one of those great stories out of Texas. Argyle Police Department, there in Texas, arrested a guy from Coral City after he admitted that he shot his girlfriend. You know, it happens. You know, we were out drinking, got all liquored up, and we were practicing our quick draws. And I didn't know the gun was, the .44 caliber Ruger was loaded, and I shot her. Didn't know the gun was loaded. Sorry, just didn't know. And then they came up with this cockamamie scheme that she had shot herself and just laid in a pool of blood for hours and hours and hours. This is where I have to agree with John Kerry. Who evidently told a group of German students that Americans have a right to be stupid. And here we go. These two have proven that to be the truth. And you know, the thing is this is how we used to thin the herd. But with all the medical advancements, all of the technology, not only is stupid surviving, stupid is multiplying. And sadly, stupid's in control of the entire Republican Party and most of the Democratic Party. Just look at the sequester nonsense. I've got Luke Vargas, Talk Radio News Service, on the line. Luke, thanks for taking time for me.
Of course. Good to talk to you.
So what do you think? John Kerry in Germany saying, well, you know, Americans have the right to be stupid.
And stupid is living longer than ever. I saw this study that came out yesterday saying 70 is the new 30, and that it's considered middle age now. So all these nut jobs that you're talking about are going to be around a lot longer than any of us bargained for.
You know, when I was a kid, you know, the kid who looked into the little round hole and pulled the trigger didn't reproduce. The sad thing is now they are.
Right, well, the only place where natural selection seems to be alive and well is here in New York City, where it seems like everyone's just falling into these subway platforms, sometimes of their own accord, but otherwise, you know, there's no railings here, so the process is alive and well in some places.
Yeah, well, the good thing here in Harrisburg, we've got sinkholes, so, you know, where natural selection isn't working, failed infrastructure is.
Sure. Well, that's a little too random for my taste. I think many people would agree with how those D-rated bridges just gets to a point where can't take it any longer.
Yeah, but the good thing here in Pennsylvania, we dedicated 2012 as the year of the Bible. More praying has made our infrastructure stronger. God wants us to have good infrastructure.
It got us this far.
So what did you think of John Boehner saying that the Senate has to get off of their tuchus and then just basically set the remaining on his tuchus?
Oh, as they voted to name more post offices, right? You know, it's just, I can't take anything that's going on Capitol here very seriously. And that's one of the reasons I'm so happy to be up here in New York. But look, the White House talks tough on this sequester stuff, saying it's a huge priority. I've seen some of these graphs that talk about, they're really just trying to put in visual perspective what this sequester cuts look like. And it's all, you know, there's 32% of Americans apparently that are in favor of watching this sequester happen. And I almost want to count myself among them and just say, look, if this perhaps could get people going, the political backlash from this, it's thanks to both the Democrats and the Republicans on the butt, then maybe I'm for it. Who knows?
There's part of me, Luke, that goes, I'm in favor of pain and suffering because maybe then, only then, will we shake people awake and say, you know what, we've given too much to the too few at the expense of the too many, and we need to get people out in the streets. We need to get people organized. And I think it's only through pain and suffering. You know, the old labor saying, when your stomach's empty, your head gets right. Maybe we need to get to that point.
Well, you know, time will tell, but until then, we're just stuck here on the outside looking in because none of our input seems to make a difference anyhow.
And the thing that gets me is you listen to all these politicians and, oh, none of them want it, but, you know, with this, you know, with how you go past a car accident or a train wreck, you know, let's take a look. The bomb is ticking. We've made the bomb. We want to see the bomb go boom.
Well, certainly over the last few months, it looks like Democrats are coming out on top in this standoff because Republicans are starting to you know, hemorrhage a little bit of support from their intransigence on Capitol Hill. So even though it looks like both sides are charging at each other head first and they likely will collide, the past few months do indicate that Democrats are winning a little bit in the PR battle. But this whole gridlock is taking the whole country down. So for that, I hope there's a resolution that's better than what we've seen so far.
And I don't want to see, oh, we'll push it off 2 more months, because that's no way to deal with our problems, and that's no way to show the rest of the world that we should be the one that is, quote-unquote, leading the world, because we can't even lead our own house.
I couldn't agree with you more.
And, you know, I look at all of this austerity, and what blows my mind is we've got a living, breathing, actual, real-time experiment going on over in Europe where they're doing all of the insanity that the corporatists in our country want to do. You know, austerity, cut, 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 get rid of government workers, fire all the teachers, fire all the firefighters. They're doing that, and look what it's doing to their economy.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, in transitioning into European politics, we had an election over the weekend in Italy. You remember about 2 years ago, we had Portugal falling apart. Greece looked like it was teetering on the edge of the Eurozone. And then the risk of Spain and Italy came into view. And Italy installed a new unelected prime minister, essentially, a technocrat, who we all thought would be brilliant. And the international community, the economic community, if you will, really seemed to like this guy because he pushed forward super unpopular austerity measures on the Italian public. That they probably would never, we know they never would have voted for in the first place. And when given the chance to continue with what they had been getting under Mario Monti, the austerity, loving technocrat, or returning, unfortunately in this case, to a womanizing old man and Silvio Berlusconi and a comedian and blogger who was the other candidate, they sort of had a mixed bag. And we have no real government to turn to, it looks like, in Italy now. So some of the markets are upset, but, you know, it's one of these things where you read the newspapers, I've been reading financial papers, and they're all saying, how could the Italians vote to reinstate party politics after a technocrat so deftly got them out of financial trouble? But, you know, it's hard to read it as an Italian because we all, I guess people in finance like austerity from afar, but no one who's a part of it wants to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, the stories that I hear just from a common sense point of view, Luke, I mean, when you look at this, how is it that on any common sense level, you can even go to a business person and say, look, we're going to pull a ton of money out of your economy, and that's going to make it grow? I mean, it makes no sense to me on any level.
Well, sure, I generally agree with you on that. I think the problem in Italy is a little different, which is that they've also been promised tons of things that they really can't support, and that one of the problems with Berlusconi in particular over the past few years is in order to hang on to power, as his personal life is ridden with scandal, he's made a lot of promises that there's really no way in hell, excuse my language, he could ever support. I mean, you can't continue to pledge to lower electricity costs and lower taxes when, in that case, that economy just cannot produce enough money to pay for all those promises. But I you know, you're pretty much right on that, though.
Yeah. I understand Jack Lew was the vote coming up. He's out of the Senate Finance Committee, going to be going to the full Senate, talking about a technocrat, talking about more of the big money folks.
Yep, he looks like he's going to have smooth sailing. I get that impression by looking at the Hagel results today, who, you know, he was the more contentious nominee, and he was able to sneak through with 4 votes from the Republican Party. So I think Jack Lew, with his interesting signature, is on his way to the Treasury and on the way to our dollar bills.
You know, it blows my mind about the whole Hagel thing. I look at Ted Cruz, the Republican senator from Texas, who has the audacity to even infer that this guy is not loyal to the U.S. Here's a guy who fought in Vietnam. Here's a guy who put on the uniform and got shot at. I'm not a Hagel fan by any stretch of the imagination, but To say that he's not loyal to the U.S., I got real problems with that.
And it seems to me that his detractors and opponents would sort of hush up once he got confirmed, because now this man is officially the world representative of our armed forces. And I've been hearing things from our friend Ted Cruz, as well as Mr. Graham in South Carolina, and they're still saying that they have reservations about this guy, and it seems to me that they're not going to be able to get away with that for much longer, because it comes a point where you're shooting our own guy in the foot and hamstringing his ability to effectively protect this country after a certain point. So yeah. This whole thing is a mess, and from what we've seen, it doesn't look like those Republicans are going to be quiet about him, as we go forward.
Any word on where Senator Bomb Iran's going to come down?
I believe he voted against Hagel today. I don't know how he's going to come on Jack Lew, but the only four that really supported Chuck Hagel, it looks like, were some of his colleagues from Nebraska, and I forget the names of the other ones, but only four, and John McCain was not one of them.
Take me back to Italy. What's going on with As the Pope Turns?
Well, the Pope is retiring on Thursday, and the announcement today is that for the rest of his life, he is going to wear the cassock, the white robes of the Pope. And he's also going to retain an honorary title of Pope Emeritus.
Nice.
And, it seems like a joke, but people are raising legitimate questions about what, this could raise conflict of interest, because you've got someone who was the grand communicator with God while he was serving as Pope, and then he can't really just back off. He's still got some sort of line connection up there. So are we going to have a Pope Emeritus and an acting Pope fighting over policy, or how exactly does this work? Is there only one phone line going up there?
Well, no, beyond the phone line, who gets the Pope Mobile? I mean, is he going to have to ask for permission like a teenager? Can I take out the Pope Mobile?
Well, it is a unique vehicle. I'm not sure you could so easily make a copy of it, but if you can have two robes, then maybe they can fashion him a vehicle all for himself. But it looks like he'll be going to a monastery in Italy, so maybe he won't be driving around too much.
Jeez, yeah, wow. the saga continues. I mean, with all of the nonsense and all of the allegations and all of the perversion and all of the whatever words you want to use going on there, just another day, and As the Pope Turns.
Oh, the jokes write themselves. It's an easy topic to discuss.
just blows my mind. So what's going on in Israel? I understand there's some interesting goings on in Israel as we speak.
Interesting, unfortunately, with Israel always means very troublesome from a security standpoint. There was a Palestinian prisoner in an Israeli jail who died over the weekend, and in response, some of Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah group launched a rocket from the Gaza Strip into Israel today, Tuesday. And, as is the case with most international relations pertaining to Israel, Israel makes a decision and then the rest of us hear about it. That's the case last month when they did a sort of unilateral airstrike in Syria. So we don't know, now that it's nighttime in Israel, exactly what this means for the ceasefire that came into effect last November. Are we going to have a new sort of military conflict between the Palestinians and Israel beginning tomorrow, or is Israel going to hold off here and just let this rocket fly in without any sort of retaliation? It's never a fun topic when something like this happens. So, but time will tell what the development is. We really can't say at the moment.
Yeah. And I understand there were talks that began today, nuclear talks with Iran. Where'd that go?
Sure, we got six powers. They're hashing it out in Kazakhstan. It's always difficult for the United States and pretty much anyone in the West to make an overture towards Iran for fear that they're going to leave them at the altar. This is the second day of talks, so at least we weren't stood up on the first day, but there is talk that perhaps over the next 24 hours, Iran might pull out of those talks. So again, we would like to be able to work with Iran and perhaps get them to acquiesce to some of our demands for scaling back their nuclear program, or at least doing them in a transparent way. But again, there's this prevailing risk that we extend the olive branch out towards them, and then they slap it down, and we're the fool again. So we don't know how this one's going to pan out either. Tons of uncertainty.
Yeah, and again, you go back to the Hagel thing where you've got Inhofe who say, well, he's not tough enough on Iran. And I go back and I wonder, is anybody going to want to have them to have a nuclear weapon, and will they allow it? It's one of those things that any person, I don't care what political party or what stripe you are, you're going to come out against that, I think.
Sure. Look, Obama was successfully voted into office twice under basically saying, we'll talk with anyone who's willing to talk with us. And as much as there's risks inherently in extending that olive branch out, I think it's a risk you've got to take just for the good of this planet. You know, if one out of 10 times that works out and we get a ceasefire or get some sort of, denuclearizing going on, I think we're all the better for it. I hope things work out.
Yeah, I've got some of my really, not sure what the right word is. The anti-Iran, anti-Middle East people. Let's nuke them all. We shouldn't talk to any of them. And most of them are on the far right. And I say, you do know that Reagan did talk to the Soviets. You remember that? They had a phone. You do know that. And they actually don't believe me that we were in constant communication with them.
Well, look, we've got a lot of political problems with the Iranians. But the Iranian people... we do overlap in certain interests. They would like peace and security probably as much as we would. And unfortunately, movies like Argo don't seem to really dig into that element of the situation too deeply. But we've got a big difference in that country, as well as throughout the Middle East, where we got people who could become our allies if we want to work with them. And then, we got political elites that really are stubborn, and they're the challenges. So we'll see how this plays out.
And speaking of a country that's recalcitrant and usually on the fringe, North Korea, are you pro Dennis Rodman going to North Korea?
I'm pro anyone going to North Korea, because every photo that these tourists take is just better than the last one. I forget who it was, but there was a daughter of a famous CEO here in the United States who had a blog. She was invited as, I think it was maybe the daughter of a Google executive, and she was like 16 or something, and had a little personal blog of all her iPhone photos that she took in North Korea, and every single one shows you a new lens into that culture. So if Dennis Rodman tweets anywhere near as good as the rest of them, then I think I'm glad he's there.
Can you imagine what the people of North Korea must think when they see the alien the worm arrive?
I overlook celebrities all the time walking on the streets of New York, but Dennis Rodman is not one guy I think I've missed very easily.
And that was his nickname. I didn't make that up.
I didn't know it, but it makes sense now that I think of him.
That is his nickname. I didn't make that up. There's no slander. There's no libel. There's none of that. That's his nickname. It has been. Anyway, Luke Vargas, I appreciate the time. Great talking with you.
Yeah, you as well. Take care.
Luke Vargas, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. Never you will look back again. You fight on to the end. Together we will live on forevermore. This land we have defended from all things dark and cruel. Now we are defenseless. The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better. Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
Many scientists have been projecting a global sea level rise of up to half a meter by the year 2100.
But sea level may be rising faster than that, according to geologist Bill Hay at the University of Colorado. His work suggests that Earth's seas are rising at the maximum rate projected by scientists, or faster.
Hay said the existing models for sea level rise don't take into account feedback mechanisms. For example, Arctic sea ice is melting, but that ice is already floating in the ocean, so that doesn't, by itself, raise sea level. But a darker surface absorbs more sunlight. The more open water there is, the more heat is trapped in Arctic waters, and the warmer things can get. That warmth causes ice from nearby landmasses, including Greenland and Canada, to melt into the sea.
Or consider groundwater. Hay said it's being used, he actually used the word mined, faster than it would be otherwise to help mitigate droughts brought on by warming temperatures. That groundwater, too, ultimately goes into the oceans.
Hay said Earth's climate seems to have certain stable states. Between those states, things are unstable and can change quickly. We appear to be in a less stable state now. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for the words sea level rise. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Yeah, you're looking for experience. You're looking for someone with a proven track record. When the climate changed about man-made global warming in this country, and everybody rushed to say, oh, we need to do something now about this huge problem, I didn't change. I stood tall and said,
this is the end.
This climate science of man-made global warming was not climate science, it was political science.
This is the end. My only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Coming this weekend, big stuff coming along. There's going to be the Keystone Progress, Pennsylvania Progressive Summit. Good stuff there. Happy to see that we're going to be, getting folks to get together. Sounds good to me. The Harrisburg Hilton, this Friday, 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock it begins. There'll be David Cobb, I guess, is going to be there, the guy from Move to Amend. This whole idea that, corporations are not people. Maybe we amend the Constitution to say flesh and blood human beings and not constructs of such. Of course, Representative Rahul Gajelva, he's going to be there from Arizona, with a word from the Progressive Caucus. And of course, the three row officers, Kathleen Kane, Eugene DePasquale, and Rob McCord will be there as well. Plenty of workshops, opportunities to talk, network, and chance to organize. Good stuff. Also on Saturday night, looking forward to the big sing-along. That's right. They're going to have protest music sing-along where we're going to go, another chance to be together, common ground. 100,000 poets and musicians for change are putting together an opportunity to get together 7:30 to 10 p.m. Cornerstone Coffee House, 2133 Market Street, Camp Hill. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com, for more details. I go back to the guy playing Quick Draw. And you go, those are the people who used to, they didn't reproduce. Now they kind of are. And that's troublesome. I don't even have really so much a problem with people doing dumb things with guns. It's the people who are really dumb that do dumb things with guns. And I look at this story that came out of Colorado, where this guy, Franklin Sam, allegedly threatened to kill, and I will read what he wrote, allegedly. I love that word, allegedly. He threatened to kill this state representative because she is a supporter of gun safety laws that says, maybe in the urban area, we should have different ideas on guns. Because where I grew up, completely different idea of guns as a kid than I have now. When I was a kid, I saw them used to kill people, which is what they're made for. In rural areas where I live now, they're seen as, you go out and shoot cans, you go out target practice, stuff like that, hunting, whatever. Completely different views. And at some point, we're going to have to balance those two. But you get whack jobs like this guy, Franklin, who wrote several emails to this representative and, left a voicemail and actually wrote another one. But a couple of excerpts from that I found interesting. He wrote in one email, I guarantee you there's not enough law enforcement or military to stop an all-out overthrow of this government if you or that N president take our guns away. He said, guarantee we will make World War I and II look like child's play. Many will die. Be prepared. I'm going, wow, a lot of people died during World War I and World War II. That's serious stuff. In another email, he said he hoped that someone with Giffords, both the state representative and the congresswoman in the area, and we both know what we all know what the Giffords reference is to the shooting there of Gabby Giffords in Arizona. The paper later went on to attribute to this Sayings a statement that there will be blood. I'm coming for you, N.B., whatever those words are. I think we both know. He said limiting magazine sizes is stupid and will not work. He said, I, for one, have 100-plus 30-round mags and 150-round drums. And this is like the best line ever. And this is where John Kerry's right. We've got an absolute right to be stupid. I will never give those up. I am by far from being some whack job. The fact that you sat down and you wrote this down, that's kind of officially what makes you a whack job. He went on to say, I ordered a ton of new 30-round magazines today. See whatever. Go blank yourself and your new law. We won't abide by C and blank, blah, blah. I'm sure very colorful language, if you will. I will never give those up. I'm far from being some whack job. No, you are. You are some whack job. And these are the exact people I don't want having guns. You know, these are the very people that scare the hell out of me. You've got the right to be stupid. Just this a bit much. And I guess I go, you know, as I said earlier, I talk a lot about my grandfather because he was influential in my thinking. And you know, when I first saw this, I go, who would be dumb enough to write this? How ignorant do you have to be to sit down, not only to email something, but to put pen to paper and write it and send it off? Just, amazing. And the thing is before the state legislator joined the legislature, her own son was shot and killed, waiting to testify against the gang member. I mean, it's really a very, very twisted. Interesting. Good news. I got to end on something good. Someone emailed me some happy facts. And because, you know, someone sent me an email, said, you know, so much of what you talk about gets me angry, gets me pumped up, gets me ready to hit the streets. Every once in a while, could you throw in something else, something happy? So someone sent me a list of four happy facts. And I wanted to end with the four happy facts. Fact number one, every year millions of trees grow thanks to squirrels, thanks to them forgetting where they buried their nuts. Fact two, chances are, as opposed to someone else, being born is about 1 in 40 million. So the chances of me being 1 in 40 million, hooray for me, yay. And a group of flamingos is called a flamboyance. And if you say my cocaine, sounds like Michael Caine saying his own name. There you go, happy. Don't you feel better? I don't think I'm going to do that again. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, therickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. Stitcher on your smartphone. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. See you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide, flood beneath the sway.